I was on RTT 3 a week ago. I said it's no longer potholes, but umgodi holes. Because if you say a pothole, it's an understatement. Between between Belfast and Grobler, I do road inspections anyway. So basically, on behalf of members, we can tell you that that is one issue that we would see. But part of the observations that members have seen is that we need to do a lot of work in terms of making sure that the provinces are hands-on and are able to really do what we have termed ourselves that we should be able to do in terms in dealing with the roads. But also, even the municipalities, we know, as we have just been talking a short while ago, CEO, that we have challenges in terms of professionals. At municipal level, it's even worse. So these are the critical things that, as we are going forward, we should be able to say, how do we assist the provinces to make sure that the provincial roads are in good condition, the municipal roads are in good condition. Remember, as a layperson, I only know that there's government of the Republic of South Africa. I don't know that there's national department, there's provincial department, there's local or district government. I just take it we are a unitary state or belonging to the Republic of South Africa. And these are the things that communities, when you talk to them, they will always be telling you. But there's only one government in the Republic of South Africa. Administratively, yes, there will be those tiers of government. But the face of government should be spoken to in many voices, but one message that we will be talking to. Having said that, you're heartily welcomed, Team Sandra. You're heartily welcomed, Team Transport, and the other CBRT is here also, and the members of the media, colleagues. It's going to be a long day, so you better ready yourself. If you can be able to go and get an energy drink, you can do that. If but no Castle Corner in this. There's no Castle Corner in this committee, so we will see it. If there's somebody who has gone to a Castle Naga corner, then you will be able to be panelized. We'll find you and we'll dictate as to the type of a fine that we're going to be made. Mr. Nazir, if you can just introduce your team and you ride on, brother. We are here to listen. You will be asked so many questions, like I'm just flagging out. Muloto is one of those. We want to see dust and nothing else in Muloto. So those are the things that we're looking forward. We want to hear about what is happening in the Western Cape. We want to hear about the number of things that you have termed yourself that you will be doing. But what is critical is that we must move South Africa forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to everybody, honourable members and my colleagues, and the members of the press. Chair, first of all, if with your permission, I'd just like to start with an apology from our chairperson, Mr. Roshan Morad, who unfortunately could not be here with us today. My colleagues, is Inga Mulder, immediately to my right, our CFO, and then Alice Matthew next to her, the company secretary, and then next to Alice is Dumisani Maluluke. We believe in 50-50, that's why there's four of us here today, you see. Also part of the finance team. Look, most of the members here will be familiar with the work that we do, etc. And we still want to say from the outset that many times we are in the press for the wrong reason, but I'm sure there'll be questions about that and we will have a discussion. You'll notice that since the last time that we've spoken to this committee, that our network has increased to 21,451 kilometers, but the toll roads have not increased. They're still at the same level as we have spoken in the past. The increase that you see on the non-toll road side has come from the Moloto Road. We inherited the Moloto Road in the two provinces, Mpumalanga and Limpopo, have transferred the road to SANRAL. That only happened in late July, towards the end of July. And the first thing that we did is that, as usual, we put in our routine road maintenance contractor to start to make the road safe. As you know, our philosophy has always been is that the first thing we do is that we fix just all the potholes, no matter what size they are or what. That's the first thing that we do. And having said that, we are now completing the preliminary designs and the conceptual designs that we have done. In fact, we had the pleasure of informing in the rounds that the your counterparts in the National Council of Provinces were doing. We did a presentation to them as well. The Gauteng part of the Moloto Road has not been transferred to SANRAL, simply because Gauteng want to have a different arrangement in terms of the funding of thereof. As the honourable members are aware, our legislation, SANRAL's Act, does not allow for us, and rightly too, we believe, to be spending money on roads which do not fall under the jurisdiction of SANRAL, for which we are not. Our entire network, which is still estimated at 750,000 kilometers, that hasn't changed, and it would be remiss of me not to mention that the backlog of the that we've previously spoken about of 197 billion rands. I'm talking about the entire network of South Africa now, please. Let me make that very clear. That is continually increasing. The length of the network that we've shown, and we have given you the numbers in terms of what has changed. Our 9 strategic objectives are there. As far as SANRAL, and we've got a new board now for about 6 months, and the strategic objectives, etc., like with any new board, are under consideration to say that are these still the objectives that we will be delivering our mandate with, or is there something that we have to do anything different? So that is also under consideration. But the issue around maintenance of good maintenance of the roads, where we provide the safe roads, that remains still sort of our priority as far as the national road network is concerned, including of course good governance and the financial sustainability. And Chair, you know, we talk about financial sustainability, but sometimes I must say, over the years that I've spoken to the honourable members, what surprises me is that, you know, the honourable members generally know what the constraints are of our country as far as the national budget is concerned. We all know what that is. We have to work within those constraints. There is no new money. And yet, you know, people will expect that we need to fund, including the backlog on our entire road network in South Africa. And the reason I mention the entire road network of South Africa, Chair, is simply because we in SANRAL, we agree with your sentiment that yes, we are directly responsible for the national road network, but we can't be standing on the side and looking at what's happening to the rest of the network in South Africa. That should not be right for us, because as you rightly pointed out, that we are a unitary state. So if we can find a different way in terms of funding this much needed infrastructure for us, out of thought that there would have been enthusiastic support for the alternative sources of funding that we try and get. You know, We're not North America or Europe where we can print money. It's not an option for us. I wish we could, you know, I mean, our printing presses are open, but it's not an option. And what surprises me as well, especially in the business sector, and I speak a lot to the business sector, people believe that when government borrows money, with the auctions, whether Sunrail has it or any of our other sister SOEs or our national treasury, that money doesn't have to be repaid. Now, if there's anybody around, you know, who wants to come and give me some money that I don't have to repay, please, please come and see me. My doors are wide open. But we need to understand, when we talk about financial sustainability, we've got to look at the overall picture, and we can't just be looking at one little small corner of this vast canvas which is in front of us. The toll road budget, as you'll see, that it is the non-toll road budget, which you see there on this particular slide. We're very thankful to Treasury that it has been here steadily increasing, but it doesn't meet the full requirements. But I'm sure the honourable members will note that at Sunrail we do not complain with what we get. We try and do the best with what we get, simply again because we understand the constraints within which we, the South African Incorporated, has to work. But you can see that in the 14-15 year, just under 12 billion rands, 12.5 in the current financial year, and then an increase going forward as well. We've also listed on what we will be spending the money. And as the members are aware, the honourable members are aware, we do have a very sophisticated asset management system, and let me again extend that invitation that the system is accessible. You don't have to come to visit us in Gauteng to see how the system works, but if you just visit our offices up here in Cape Town, you're very welcome to get a demonstration of how we decide in terms of on what we're going to be spending the money, the allocations that we get. The toll road budget, as the members are aware, that one has to maintain what we've got currently. We can't afford this asset of ours to deteriorate. So although there hasn't been any new toll roads on the network, we have to maintain this, and you can see that, and you can also see in terms of what our income projections are. And there will be later on, I'm sure people are going to talk about the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project. There's been a number of, from time to time, parliamentary questions around that. And hopefully the honourable members will recognise that we're sending you the information as we get it over there, and very, very transparently. The financial year. First of all, let me start off by saying that again, we are pleased to have received an unqualified report. This is the umpteenth one that we're getting as an unqualified report. But let me also apologize in the same breath to the members that there are certain issues which are administrative issues which have been raised as matters of emphasis or other matters. But that let me unreservedly apologize, because we'll find most of them have been purely simply because that's including me, and I can't say it's only my colleagues, because at the end of the day the buck stops with me and not with my colleague. We became a bit slack, we took the eye off the ball. These are administrative issues. The AG has not found any form of maladministration or any kind of fraud or corruption or anything of that sort. And we apologize for that at the occasion that we did take the eye off the ball, and that perhaps because, you know, we were spending too much time in court. No, that's not true. Then, as far as you'll see in the audit report, paragraphs 23 to 26, as we said, it's a lack of attention to detail. And what we have done now, immediately, as this was picked up by the AG, that we have put in additional control measures to identify and close the deficit. Hopefully those kind of things don't happen again. But we are human. I'm sure we will occasionally make the errors, but we will pay much more attention to that and be more diligent in the housekeeping within the agency and the emphasizing that. Then there is a paragraph 31 where the Auditor General has noted again that there is the issue so with the public protector. Now, I want to say that we invited the public protector way back in May 2012 because there were lots of allegations, serious allegations that had been made in the press. And because that we didn't want those kind of allegations to continue, we wrote to the public protector in May 2012, that's more than 3.5 years ago, to say, please, you are very welcome to conduct any kind of investigation that you like. We had a response from our public protector's office, and I quote directly from the letter, under the second bullet point there, where she wrote back to us and says, and I quote, revert to you in due course should a need arise, unquote. Now, I'm not sure whether it would be fair of us to assume that since there's been no need has arisen, that's why she's not come back to us 3.5 years later, but it is the job of the Auditor General to note this thing. But the AG is also undertaken on our behalf, and we want to thank the AG for that, to take it up with the public protector as well directly, because this kind of thing which is hanging over us doesn't augur well for the reputation of Sandra. But not only that, I think most of the honorary members are aware that the tender documents together with the contract documents have been available on our website since those years ago already. Not only that, we've handed the full set of documents to third parties as well, including members of the Parliament, that we have handed the full documents to. It is my contention that having given those documents to the third parties now that I'm talking about over here, which include members of Parliament, if there was anything untoward in there, I don't think they would have allowed me to sit here today, look you in the eye, and tell you that we've been running a clean ship as far as it's concerned. On occasion, as I said, then we do take the eye off the ball, but as far as the cleanliness of the ship is concerned, I can look you in the eye and say that we don't have anything to be concerned about. Then, in terms of the irregular expenditure, and I assume that this has come up before, and we've explained this as well, that what we used to do in the past, we no longer do that. And we warned the members of here, because it was specifically a member of this committee who raised this with us in the past around the issue as to how we did the award of the tenders on our routine road maintenance contract, where we set aside 80% of our work for our SMMEs. And what we used to do, and if you look at the Act, the PPPFA Act, unfortunately the PPPFA Act does not give you a definition of lowest price or the phrase lowest acceptable price. It talks about the lowest tender. So what Sunrail had done in terms of trying to protect the SMMEs from being exploited and giving unsustainable prices, we used to use a statistical method to establish a benchmark amongst the tenders that used to come up from the bank. And we used to get the guys at the Pretoria University, a couple of professors, to establish the benchmark and do the calculations. And the one nearest to the benchmark, then that is the tender that we used to award to the management contractor. And thereafter, we used to put out the tenders for the SMMEs, then who knew what the target price was. Now, because of this issue which has been raised, we no longer do that. And I can show the honorable members that in the tenders that we're getting right now, they will not be, in a lot of instances, will not be sustainable for our SMMEs. And that's the sad part of it. But it's not all doom and gloom. It's not all doom and gloom, because if we all look at the draft on the new regulations around the PPPFA, it does actually start to be considering as to what the lowest acceptable price is, and we believe that we would be able to determine that now statistically. But there's another side to it as well that, you know, we missed in the past, that when you derive a tender price or a benchmark, I should say, the lowest acceptable price, statistically, it also assists in avoiding collusion. And that is a fundamental thing that this particular instrument will allow us to use as well. I'm not saying that it will completely remove collusion, because those people are determined to collude and continue to do it. And we need to be vigilant about that. But this particular methodology of calculating a lowest acceptable price, we believe, will assist in terms of discouraging bad behavior on the part of contractors. So, Chair, hopefully we have clarified and cleared the air in terms of what has appeared in our annual report. The rest of the presentation, some parts you will be familiar with, but let us tell you some of our achievements which are recorded in the AG's report. But like all good human beings, you know, people will concentrate on the things which I've just listed on the previous slides around there, but the other good things that the AG talks about in our report, unfortunately, don't get the same coverage as perhaps as one should as well, and that's what we want to highlight, and we're apologizing for taking the eye off our ball. Now, I've said previously, and let me say again, there's one table that the honorable members should measure us by, is this particular table over here. We get a budget allocated, and you need to see whether we have awarded the work to the value of the budget that we receive. Because that is the indication of saying that, yes, SANRAL is performing, and more importantly, that we are contributing to job creation as well. Because if this work is not being put out over there, the jobs do not get created, and that's the value, and you can see over the years in terms of the award of the contracts. The operating expenditure in terms of the length of the road that we have maintained and the money that we have actually invested in maintenance, you can see the figure for routine road maintenance, periodic maintenance, special maintenance. Now, those are just terminologies that we use for engineering purposes and for accounting purposes. I prefer to use the phrase that we are preserving the assets of South Africa by doing the work that we need to do. So the total spend as far as operating expenditure is concerned is just on 3.7 billion rands to one decimal place. On the continuing with the non-toll expenditure, the capital expenditure this time round, the strengthening improvements, new facilities, and that has gone to just over 6.7 billion rands. The strengthening, just to give a quick indication of what we mean, we don't have sufficient funds these days in terms of putting the additional lanes, etc. But one thing we can't afford to do is to let the pavement, the stuff that we drive on, deteriorate. So we need to strengthen that from time to time to make sure, because there's an increase in the traffic. And that is the reason why we have to continue the strengthening of our roads. The toll road on the operating expenditure, again, that you can see the figures that we've got, they're very similar to last year's as well in terms of the expenditure, and again, the definitions that we've used are similar to that of the non-toll roads. The capital expenditure as well. One of the things that we concentrated on last year when it's just recorded under strengthening, this is not money which was spent on the roads itself, but the facilities that we have in terms of doing the overload control, where the trucks get stopped, they get checked for roadworthiness, and to see whether they overload it or not, and including what we've introduced is the many in which we record is a system that we call the ITIS, and also the intelligent transport system. So that's because it's the number of projects that the money is being spent on, because it's not the length of roads, because there were no length of roads involved in that one. Then the improvements in the facilities, that you'll see that in terms of what we've spent on the toll roads. Part of the socio-economic developments that we've achieved or contributed to, I should say, during the course of the year, you can see the value of the work that we have actually awarded to the historically disadvantaged companies. 52% of our work has gone in terms of empowerment. That includes the expenditure or the investment we've made in SMMEs as well. And again, as we said earlier on, the routine road maintenance is low entry barriers. We have a high existing concentration of that in terms of SMMEs, and that's why you'll see that spend on that is 83% of everything that we spend on routine road maintenance has gone to empowerment companies. And I want to also draw the attention to the members that we do check if there's any fronting in that taking place. And there are people from time to time who will try that, whether necessary action is taken. So when we're talking about the empowerment companies over here, these are genuine people who are doing this work. Similarly, in terms of just a further breakdown of the non-toll roads and the toll roads that we've got and the utilization of non-black and black enterprises, and it gives you a breakdown as well in terms of what we've got. It's a total of about just under 3 billion rands. The women-owned companies as well. We're not doing this just because, you know, we've had August come and go. This is a factual thing. We're not doing it as well as we should be doing, but we do face the challenge. And not only in this sector, and this is one of the more difficult sectors for people to enter, the construction sector. And again, an extending invitation to the members, that's the reason we've given you those little orange booklets as well. Some of them are in there, not all of them. Some of them you will find in there. These people do actually exist. Please do come and meet them. Please do come and meet them. That they do. And it's 1 billion range in terms of value of work that we've awarded to 172 women-owned companies. Now, you see, I don't have a record of the previous one, that's right? Because the record will show that suddenly, you know, we've woken up to the reality, but this has been a steady, slow growth, and that is what's happened around it. It's just a picture of the lady of one of the companies over there. But I think the important thing for us to note over there is that the training that we provide for these people, and this is accredited training. This is not, a day course or a short course that they're attending somewhere and get a piece of paper which is not worth the value of that piece of paper. This is genuine training that we got the coach out of there. One other thing also, as part of the training, Chair, I think it will come later, so let me talk about that later. This is our actual expenditure that we have spent just 8.6 million rands in terms of training. This is for external training that we spent on. This is not internal training. On the training that I was talking earlier about the SMMEs, etc. and so forth. Yeah. The number of jobs that we've created in terms of person hours, and then we usually take the person hours and we divide it by 2,000 to get the equivalent full-time job. And the reason, the construction industry is such that some people will work on the site for the duration of the contract, whether it's 6 months or 18 months, etc. There are certain activities within that 18-month period get completed within 2 to 3 months, for instance. And that's the reason why we record the person hours, which gives you a fairer indication of what it is, and that's the wages part only, which is recorded over a year of just over 2 billion rands. We do concentrate, as far as road safety is concerned, on education. And our concentration is not on the adults. we're concentrating heavily at school. The number of sites that we visited, a site meaning to say that we come to argument, say, one to for a better example, we come to Cape Town, there'd be X number of schools in Cape Town. That's why you see the site number is different to the number of schools, because one particular district could have 5 schools or 7 schools, etc. And that shows you the number of schools that we visited, which is 326 schools we visited. But we don't only concentrate on the children over there, but we provide the necessary training material and that to the teachers, because we believe that it is very, very important for us for that program to continue at our schools, and our kingpins at the schools would be our teachers. And you can see the number of teachers that we have actually reached out to in terms of having received the teachers. But the number of teachers is very pleasing to see that nearly 50% of the teachers have actually attended the workshop as well. And we need to, say thank you to the teachers, because this they do outside of their teaching hours, outside of school hours. This is dedication shown by the teachers. And just some pictures to show about what's happening. The staff demographics within the company in the last financial year, there's 295 of us, and that gives you a breakdown in terms of the staff demographics. Male, female, this is not yet fully acceptable by my principal, by my boss lady. She thinks the blue part should be about another 10% from there, and the sort of purplish part on the left-hand side should reduce by 10%. But 50-50 is not too bad to start with, and I'm sure things will improve as we go forward on that. Then there's a couple of other things which we do in terms of contributing to the development of South African conference. Now, over the years, I've invited the members, and this is probably the last time, Chair, that I'll be addressing honorable members here today. Please visit our school down the road in Kairitsha, the one that we support, the Coset School. That's part of the school program that we run for maths and science that we support, and some of the scholars come from there as well. Not all of them, but it's just down the road. It's worth a visit. If you tell us when you want to go as a group, we'll make sure you get some lunch as well with the teachers. All right? We don't mind about that. We'll do that. It's down the road. Then, of course, the external bursaries that we're giving. And we're going to double our efforts in terms of increasing the number of females who apply for bursaries. These are for civil engineering mainly, and of course the environmental sciences and some of the other related fields that in our work as well. So our main concentration is on civil engineers, and that is what we provide. Then of course internships, very important, that we can't turn around and just send our children to school and to university and that, and don't give them some of the experiential training that they require to be able to get permanent jobs elsewhere. And you can see that we've got 217 interns. And in this one, we're doing better as far as the female component is concerned. 59% of the interns are female. These are just some pictures of what we do. I want to also say that the honorable members are aware of what we do at the universities. We've added on the University of the Free State. The University of Free State does not do anything in engineering. They're sponsoring the chair in maths and science. And that's a deliberate decision which was taken by Sunrail, that we need to make sure that, you know, it's no good we're turning around and we tell the whole world about the SKA, the SCAR, the Square Kilometer Array facilities that are under construction, which are coming into use soon, and yet we don't train the necessary people and the physicists and the mathematicians to man that. And that's why we've deliberately taken the view that that's what it is. I also again want to make the offer to the honorable members that if there's any research work that the members want done as a committee, totally independent from Sandal in terms of academic work, you know, the guys at UCT and Stellenbosch are available for that as well, to do that. And then in terms of the one thing that I should mention, which is not shown in the slide, we this year, Chair, established an academy, a training academy. This is for the young adults who come out of university who require the training to be able to register as professional engineers at the end. And the third thing to note is that we made this offer to all of our provinces, just to pick up on what you earlier said, Chair, regarding what kind of assistance can we provide to the provinces and that. And it is our belief that the provinces should fill their vacancies with these graduates coming out from our universities and that. And we can expand the academy. Currently we only have people from Sandal attending this academy. It is based in PE, but it is easy to expand. It is you. We are going to be getting one student from our neighboring country soon, because they've heard about it, and we said, yeah, it's fine, you can send the person. They will, of course, bear the cost of it, but we don't charge any fees, because this is a training camp. So what we're saying is that the structured training has been provided for the graduates. And when they completed that training, we want them to go and sit for the professional examinations. And we hopefully, of course, we wish them all and that they will pass and be successful in the exams and they will be able to be registered in the field that they have received the studies. And so we've added that in as well as the academy. But that's an internal initiative that we've taken, and it's not an external initiative that we've taken. It doesn't help that we have bursaries to kids. They come out of university and they're floundering around. So we thought that this is very important for us to do this. And then in terms of our performance, right, our indicators, etc., in terms of what we have achieved and where we have faltered. It is not our job to turn around and point fingers at other departments, etc., and that, other than just to make an appeal for your assistance as a committee, specifically the chair, for better cooperation from our sister departments so that our projects do not get delayed. We do have projects, with some of them which are delayed for 2 years because the other departments have not completed what they have to complete, and then they don't recognize that, you know, the cost are escalating. Perhaps if we had some kind of sanctions which we apply to them, like a fine or something for the delays that they cause, you know, maybe that will assist us in terms of what we're doing. Cooperative working relationship, this was the cross-border bridge that we are building between Botswana and South Africa, and there were some ground conditions, and that's the only reason why that particular project is running late. Not that it hasn't started, it is under construction and everything, but it hasn't met its full target. Continuing on the summary on that, you can see that we have actually met all of our targets except for the research and innovation around there. There has been some delay in finalizing some of the scope for the research that we're doing with the institution again, but we've had discussions with the institution concerned, and that they said that they will have to put on a little bit more resources, otherwise we'll have to find another institution to do the work, a research institution. So and then we thought it would be useful for us to as well to inform the honorable members of our intentions. You know, I always tell people, yes, it's a very good thing that we have the MTF program, etc., but until we see the final budget every year in February from our Honorable Minister of Finance, the rest of it is as a wish list. But you'll see what we're going to be spending in the different provinces on our road network, and that is just going to be over 62 billion rands in terms of what we have been planning. This graph is always useful to see as well for the members, in terms of you can see that this is a direct correlation with the price of oil, and the price of bitumen is starting to fluctuate accordingly. The reason we show this particular index is just to show as to that in the past, between whether we look at the green line or the blue line, the red line is what we call the construction price adjustment indices. That is what we adjust all of our contracts which are longer than 3 months construction duration by that particular factor. It's a formula that we've agreed with in the industry, but the indices are published by Stats South Africa. So they give it to us and we punch it into this formula and we make the necessary adjustments. And you can see as to what is happening in terms of that. The CPAF is at least catching up with the producer price index. That gap is narrowing. And yes, in a way, one can turn around and say that yes, that's a very good sign. But that's also a sign of what is happening in the industry. The industry, the construction industry, is in decline. That's also a sign of it. So from a price point of view, we can turn around and say, yes, that's a very good indication that the prices are leveling off, but it's also a sign, an indication of the decline in the construction industry. And the construction industry is one of those industries, I've said in the past, and I say again, which has the ability to be able to employ the semi-skilled and the unskilled. And that's just an indication. I'm saying it's an indication as to what we need to be able to do in terms of going forward. Then, again, we've invited honorable members, and I said so earlier on in the beginning of my presentation, that please come and see some of this equipment, etc. You don't have to come to Gauteng to come and see all of this. It's on the road, working from time to time. Please do visit it. There was one honorable member recently who visited the Juvenile Tunnel. I was told that he came inappropriately dressed and he didn't brave the cold of the unfinished tunnel. But I'm sure he'll tell us his story himself about that one over there. But I was told that he enjoyed the visit to actually go and see for himself as to what happens in the tunnel and some of the work that we do on the road itself. This is again a graphical representation in terms of what our allocation is versus the need. It's important for us to always to show this particular one because that shows you that particular gap in terms of our need versus the allocation that we get. Our TORUP program is still continuing. It is where it has always been. Things have not changed as far as our borrowing limits or capacity or anything of that change, because we have not had to go and we have not expanded our network, so we have not had to go to National Treasury to review any of this at this particular stage. But I'm sure going forward that one will have to do that. We're very thankful that we've managed to retain our rating thus far. We've retained it, but we're still on the negative outlook, so we're not out of the woods yet. We're very far from being out of the woods. This is where one says that, you know, one is keeping afloat. This is the unfortunate graph that I was talking to you about earlier, in terms of our income for the GFIP, where we're showing the forecast versus the actual. And like I said earlier on, this is information that is at fairly regular intervals. Parliamentary questions come up, and this will be an update to what you've already have. Some of the challenges that we still face, and yes, we will note that there is a resistance to the user-pay principle as espoused in the NDP, but like I said earlier on, as part of our objectives is that we need a financially stable institution. How do we develop a financially sustainable institution if we are not ready to embrace the alternative resources that are available to us? How do we do that? Let's be honest amongst us and let's answer that question without trying to score points of each other. Nobody's complaining and talking about the quality of the roads. Nobody. I've not heard a complaint from anybody in Gauteng about the roads and that. Nobody complains that the national road network is pothole free. Nobody complains about that. And yet, that we pick up the attention for what I so believe is the wrong reason. Because we're trying to do that. As the outgoing CEO, let me make an appeal, please. Can we work together on this to make sure that these institutions are financially stable? Otherwise, we're all in the same boat. I'm going to drive on the same pothole road as you're going to drive on. My car is going to be damaged just as much as your car is going to be. So let's look after each other in terms of each other's interests. And of course, we're talking about the improvements that we need to make at the high-level planning and coordination between the intermodal facilities that we have, transport modes that we have between the three spheres of government. The loss of opportunity that we mentioned over there, none of these have changed, and I'm sure there's going to be questions and amendments which we will answer, so I don't want to preempt the questions. Otherwise, you know, we've not have spent sufficient time with you maybe, so we'll wait for the questions to come on that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Nafis Ali. Honorable members, there we are. Short and concise, that is what Sandra has given. Honorable Ramatakana. It doesn't look like that.
No, thank you.
Have really made a very good presentation. There are no hands.
No, no.
Honorable Ramatakana, you start, it goes down like that.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thank to Mr. Ali's presentation. I will ask the usual question I asked, and I was probably the third year in a row that I asked this question, where you always end. It always worries me when you talk about insufficient high-level planning. Why is it so that it's so difficult to get this? Because if you end up into contestations about what must be done and what must not be done. Why is it so difficult? Because this is a high level you're talking about. That's really my question. Maybe you may be more frank today because you're saying this is your last presentation to this committee on this. You're outgoing. You may be frank enough for us to use as a stepping stone to solution to achieving this high-level integration. Because in many cases, everybody accepts the premise of a state that we are unitary, that we're working together, it's cooperative, the constitution, everything makes it possible to happen. But what is the sticking point here? The second really question, I mean, I do see that this water license, it's another worry that is delaying it. Maybe it's a matter that, again, it's a matter perhaps that we need to put into another basket of discussion. How do we help in terms of moving forward? It's not the first time we hear about it. I don't want to disappoint my promise of not being long, but let me ask this question. There is this issue about the going concern that the Auditor General raises. Can you comfort us beyond the AG's concerns? I think there is an issue that there is a problem with the collection issues. the projections and the realities, 60 million versus 260, if I'm right, if my memory is not leaving me behind. So what there's a gap in between that the reality and the projection. What is it that you are doing as a plan to address this particular issue? In fact, this question also is a question that Department of Transport, on one hand, given that it's not only the problem that we can solve. And I think that that's really for me the third question, that it is a worry, the whole thing about the Boeing concern. And if that is, it takes you take it beyond that, if it is in the non-compliance or a breach and there is a call-up, the call-up in terms of the breach, what is the plan? Just for me, complex and fairly serious financial, that may have financial implications for the country. So what is the plan to address that? Thank you, Chair.
Sibande?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also like to thank maybe the Sandra, but it came because they started by apologizing. I don't know what to say. Okay, but nevertheless, in order to build each other, you see, Chairperson, I will be specific. Number one, yesterday there was an incident, there was a bridge which collapsed. So I wanted to find out that, is that bridge not under your control? Because my understanding that you are controlling national roads. And if so, who's responsible for the monitoring? I mean, for safety monitoring. And then, again, do you still remember the saga about the e-tolls? Up until there was an intervention by the deputy president. So, thus far, what are the development after that? Because my worry is a person. Also, again, the same. It's about implementation. Whereby, even ourselves, we can make some recommendation, but at the end, some people, they don't implement those recommendations. Then that contributes to the failure of that particular thing which has been raised. And again, you know, help me so. You know, I recall sometimes, not you, but somebody, about the issue of the number plates cloning. And they said, no, nothing, our systems in South Africa are so professional. But I wanted to find out whether does it have any impact in terms of collection of revenue of the e-tolls. Because a few days ago, it was alleged that somebody was a doctor, something like that, was found a huge money of cloning. That means cloning is there. And then again, Chairperson, I'll make this to summarize this one then. You see, there's something which is worrying me. You made an example with the Gauteng roof. What about Western Cape roof? And a few days ago, some people took with her anti-e-tolls. Because my little understanding, before we were born, there were toll gates. The difference between a toll gate and e-toll, the toll gate you stand and pay, the e-toll you don't stand and pay. But why, you know, why you treat provinces not equal? Other provinces, you implement what is there for collection of revenue or whatever for the money which you have borrowed. But in Western Cape, you are so polite. Lastly, it's about the issue of bursaries and scholarship. Chairperson, I'm from the rural area. I'm the rural boy. May you please take us on board, if possible. if you can give us breakdowns about your assistance, about your scholarship and the bazaars. Because what I'm scared of, most of the time, some of the contribution by the very same government, it goes to the haves, while the have-nots are still suffering. I'll put it there, Chairperson, and I'll come next round. Thank you, Ross.
Thank you, Chairperson, and also welcome the report. Two issues. Also commend the agent for getting unqualified report. However, there are issues that were raised by the Auditor General when we met them on Tuesday. And in the main, they revolve around supply chain management. So I think they were also forwarded to them. One, the contracts were awarded to bidders who had not submitted a declaration of past supply chain practices such as fraud, abuse of the SCM system, and non-performance, which was prescribed in order to comply with Treasury regulation. Two, contracts were submitted to bidders based on preference points that were not allocated and or calculated in accordance with the requirements of the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act and its regulations. And then invitations for competitive bidding were not always advertised in at least the government tender bulletins as required by the Treasury regulations. And then the last one, Sandra did not always obtain three quotations on procurement of goods and services under 500,000 where it could have reasonably obtained this, had the request for quotations been made timely. So I would want to check with the CEO and his team if ever they've attended to these issues of supply chain as raised by the Auditor General. And then two, which is the last Chairperson, it might have been dealt with before. I was not there in this committee before. Where you have got different standards of service level in one country, when are we, maybe we'll ask Transport Department, maybe Sandra, they can't respond to this. We'll ask the Transport Department at some stage, probably, Chairperson. But just for noting, say for instance, you take the R81 road between Pulukwan and Gian, up to the bridge in town in Sandral is a very high level standard. From the bridge to Punta Maria is something else. Yeah, it's province, and whether it's a district, and it's one motorist driving from Pulukwana all the way to Punta Maria. Once it gets into Guyana, it gets into something else. What happens in such a situation? And there's different standards which are complied to. You find in Limpopo, where I come from, there's the RAL, where they've got a different service level of their standards in terms of the services of roads. You get into Mpumalanga. So, as I say, Chairperson, that probably I'm bothering Central, whereas this should be the Department of Transport responsibility, as it is their responsibility as the custodian of the road network system in the whole country. Municipalities, you go there, it's another very substandard which they apply. because I felt it was for nothing, we'll deal with it maybe at another level. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm going to start also with the general report. If we look at material misstatements to the financial statement, of a AG report, page 10. It's on the presentation of Auditor General. It's clear that it's saying that key officials is lacking the appropriate competency. Then we go to appropriate competencies. When we go to predetermined objectives, we've got slow response by senior management. Now this is in a presentation that was made to us. If we go to supply chain management, that's the area that you dealt with. So I just wanted to deal with the other areas that wasn't dealt with. But if we look at irregular expenditure in all entities within transport, Sanral is actually responsible for just over 70% of all irregular expenditure from all entities. So I don't know. There might not be a red mark, and it might be a little bit better than last year, but it's still not good. It is really not good. It's not something to boast about to say we took the ball, our eye off the ball. 70% of all irregular expenditure from all the entities in transport, 70% of that is within Sanral. I want to actually just ask a question. How much do we, and I must say, I appreciate that the statement and the understanding that we need to preserve the assets, because we're preserving the assets, our road infrastructure, for futures to come, or for generations to come, for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren and all of that. Now, I want to get an understanding. We're sitting in a tight budget where it's difficult. We need to get e-tolls and all that type of things in place and working in order for us to maintain the roads. But what good is advertising on ETV, on DSTV, on SABC doing, and what is the cost that we are spending on this advertising that actually has nothing to do with what service is it actually rendering? So we're rolling out new roads to you. How much money are we spending on that? We look at I don't want to get into an e-toll fight when we are supposed to deal with BRRR reports, okay? But the issue has been raised, and it would be extremely wrong if we actually don't respond to it. I think firstly, to some of the comments that unfortunately came from yourself as well as from members. And it's important to know that I'm not here, and not one of us on this side is here, okay, for any other reason but that South Africans put us here to look after their best interests as well. Now, when it comes to people saying, and if we look at affordability, we look at petrol crisis, we look at all of that, it's also things that we need to take into consideration. Let's go to the road to Mafeking, is it N4? Yeah. That has got some of the highest toll fees, but it's one of the worst roads that I have traveled on. It's definitely one of the worst toll roads. I get an understanding. Let us stop, like the comment was, what's the difference between a toll and a e-toll? The toll is I stop and I see what I pay for. The e-toll, I have never been in that road with a personal vehicle, but I get a 58,000 rand bill. That's the difference. Then we all say that, listen, well done on the work that we are doing in, with the schools and scholar training and all of that. But, and I'm quite sure you have been all across the world to see what those safety programs are in place. But one of the places that really fascinated me was Taiwan. And every time, even yesterday traveling to Parliament, the highway was busy and I took Voortrekker Road. There's a pedestrian crossing, Russia, the robot, but scholars and people will decide to go and stand 5 meters further. No one at the pedestrian crossing, but they will be zigzagging through the traffic. You know, I think those are all things that we should be concentrating on to petty crime. You try and walk across a road in Taiwan, they lock you up. They lock you up. The time says you've got 30 seconds, 29, 28, 27, the counter down. You see those people run. No one will cross the road. But not in South Africa. We really need to concentrate on that as well. I'm going to leave it to there for now. Thanks.
Honorable De Freitas.
Thank you, Chair. Always interests me and amuses me how the CEO of SANRAL so cleverly makes his presentations. Because, of course, people want safe, the good roads, and Gautengers are very happy with their roads. That's the objective. And so that's not the point of contention. Nobody said that the contracts, there's anything wrong with the contracts, the ETOL contracts. Nobody said there's anything wrong. What the people of Gauteng are saying, and the Western Cape, which, by the way, has proved the point, is that they weren't properly consulted. And that's always been the case. And as I've said, I think 2 years ago, in a similar hearings, it doesn't count that you put a postage size stamp size advert on Christmas Day on page 44. That's not public consultation. And that's what the issue about, and Samuel doesn't seem to understand this. And all they had to do was to simply consult and had some kind of proper public participation process, not a pretend one. And they wouldn't have had the communities and the people up in arms as they are right now. And the case last week in the Western Cape proved that exact point. That's really what it's about. I'm not going to cover what previous speakers have said about the difference between tolls before there was e-tolls. I insist, I think it's ludicrous if that's even spoken about. And then what I did want to also just pick up was the what Honourable Carter had said earlier as well, which I had on my list, and that is I don't understand what's... I mean, I do. I know why SANRAL is putting in adverts costing the taxpayer millions in newspapers and on TV and everywhere else that you can see, saying how wonderful SANRAL is, because they're trying to clean up their image. Now, instead of doing that and doing a public participation process, And bringing the public into the fold, that would have been much more effective. So now they've looked at this problem, and that the people are simply resisting. And the more people talk about e-tolls, the angrier they get. And I don't know about, I'm sure other members around the table will agree with me. When I talk to communities, when they have public meetings, people are just hurtful. They're just angry. People in the Gauteng. And when you start talking to people in other provinces, the kind of language they're saying is, well, then this is daring e-tolls to our province. Now that's already on a bad footing. If Samuel wanted to do this and wants to roll this out, they're going about all the wrong way. And all they do is add fuel to the fire. So I don't know who your public relations people are, but I mean, for example, your spokesman, after the court case in the Western Cape, to then threaten to say in the next 20 years they will not get any upgrades in the Western Cape and that kind of thing, it's rubbish. Besides it being unconstitutional, you don't do that. So it's very 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 sad to hear that. Let me just say that I've been a supporter of SANRAL, excepting for the e-tolls issue, for many years. If South Africa was run the way SANRAL was run, we'd be the best country in the world. And I've said that before, so I'm saying it again. So SANRAL does a fantastic job in maintaining our roads, in fulfilling its mandate, and doing other things, as shown in a booklet, where it empowers people, it gives opportunities, for real opportunities, not pretend demographic opportunities, real opportunities where people get opportunity to economically and to grow and need education and so forth. These are all things that all our entities should be doing. But where they've fallen absolutely flat, and because of that one issue, their whole image is tainted, is because of these e-tolls. And it's a complex issue that somehow SANRAL just seems to sort of kind of say, you've got to pay up, buddy, and that's that. Well, that's not the solution. And I'm afraid, lucky for Mr. Ali, he's walking away and he's going to retire and blind the sun. But for his successor, he's going to be lumped with this big problem. Because this problem's not going to go away. and people are talking about they will not pay their licenses and they will drive around without licenses. So the whole problem becomes worse once legislation gets changed and you're forced to pay your e-tolls, because it compounds the whole thing. I mean, talking to people, to communities, people are saying, they can, I won't pay licenses. I'll drive around illegally in my car. I mean, so the problem is getting even worse. So I'd just be interested to hear on that. On the other issues, a lot of my colleagues have covered it, so I'm fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Having said that, I must commend Sandral for their very good communication skills. This is one of the best, irrespective of how the communication is, on e-tolls is superb. We have to say, much as we'll be having a different LE things that we'll be talking about, every time there's either the department or other SOEs coming here, we talk to them that your communications and your approach to communications is found wanting. I mean, as you look at this yellow book, I've just quickly gone through it. You are able to identify with the projects that are there on the ground. And even when they talk on TV, it's just that we have never given ourselves a time as this committee to listen to what the issues that the Deputy President has spoken to, except in Parliament where the Deputy President was answering questions. But it will be important if we read those documents that we can be able to have a broader understanding of what this is all about. Like what somebody has said, we were born, when some of you were born, I was already born when toll gates came, for sure. When some of you were born, toll gates started. But critical is the what becomes important. You have said it very loudly, Honorable De Freitas. Communication prior any other program starts is very, very critical. And now that communication is happening, probably if they do pre-communication, it definitely will be able to see us being able to really go into the exercise of the roads in the country being well looked after. The one other thing that I wanted to engage with Sandra, which Honorable Matongani has so eloquently spoken to, I said it earlier on, was the that we are a unitary state as people in the Republic of South Africa. And for us to have different types of roads and different quality, different standards of roads, is something that one is trying to comprehend as to what exactly, how can we be able to assist? Because when you go to the municipalities, besides the fact that the rules are they are lean and mean and quality non-existent, you go to the provinces, you get another approach. Actually, you go to the national roads, it's one of those, the best anyway. Is there no possibility that we, through Sandral, because you are really hands-on, that we are able to assist some of these tiers of government to have proper roads? But I'm saying this because the department is here, that we should be able to start looking into policies of standardizing the quality of roads in this regard. So that will be able to assist. Earlier on, you spoke to question of better cooperation with other departments on projects. We would like to really be engaged as the portfolio committee if we are able to know. I know that Department of Water Access sometimes becomes very challenging. Is water and sanitation? What is that? Environmental assessments and all those other things are also a challenge. They do delay the programs. What are the things that as a portfolio committee we can be able to do to really assist such that you are able to work on the other things? But, you know, it's to me it doesn't make sense that Gauteng government is saying Muloto Bolotho Road on the side of Gauteng, they're still holding and hanging in there. What are the issues that we can be able to do so that we're able to engage with the portfolio committee in the legislature of Gauteng, if they believe that they can be able to do things better than the way they believe Sandal can be able to do? What are the critical things that Gauteng is doesn't want to release the road to Sandal? Those, I think, honourable members have tried to say, but all in all, you are exiting, you must make sure that whoever arrives doesn't defocus, like you have said, an apology that the management really eyes were a bit off the ball, and hence these issues that the AG has raised, which actually I think probably let's accept the apology, honourable members, because he's in exit anyway. But you must just make sure that as he is exiting, the others who come, they've got their eyes on the bull's eye, and make sure that they don't falter by the wayside, because it's doable that you can get a clean audit, not an unqualified, with some matters of emphasis. You can be able to get a clean audit in this regard. But work has been done, and for sure some of the organization can be able to come and copy the good practices that Sandal has, as it has been so eloquently explained to by some members. Mr. Ali.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the honourable members for the questions. There's been a number of questions which are very similar in nature, so I will cover them together. Let me start off at the top of the list in terms of the insufficient high-level planning. I think what we need to do as a government, what the government is to do, I think we need to restructure the MINMAC structures that we have in government. And we need to not just have them where the ministers meet and then with the MECs, etc., but the programs that would be coming out of MINMAC. What we don't have, I believe, at the MINMAC level is a planning component. We have at MINMAC various components in terms of who is doing what in their provinces, and we need to have a component set up there, perhaps as part of the secretariat, that will pull in all of these different things happening in the different spheres of government. Now, we have tried to do that with NECMAC. Yeah, but that only deals with the road network. And I believe that it has some level of success. It's not exactly to where we'd like it to be, but it is improving. We need that to have that as a transport facility. So when we talk about logistics, for argument's sake, or when we're talking about public transport, etc., so you will have different type of things happening in the different cities, because each one is its own nuance. Each one requires a particular type of solution for this sort of thing. But the overall policy, for instance, that, for instance, we should turn around and make it compulsory that an X percentage of your budget will always be spent on public transport. And the type of public transport will be directly related to the affordability levels of the communities that we live in, etc. And that kind of stuff, I think, should fall under the ambit of MINMAC, and that's where we should be concentrating on fixing that high level. We can't have on the one side, for instance, that the policy on rail, for instance, is done in Department A, but the operations are done in Department B, and the two don't talk together. It has to be made compulsory that the two of you will talk. Now, where we're finding with that is happening is around the SIP programs, because the SIP programs are forcing the coordinators to make sure that the coordination is taking place for the areas that they're responsible for, and they make sure that all the people responsible who have to, on a particular project are in the same room. And we should learn from our SIP. There are good lessons for us to take forward from the SIP initiatives that we've got. And that is what I'll suggest, and I'd like to believe that, Sandra, we've always been frank about the early stage, that's the suggestion I'd make, that let's learn from what we've done in the SIP, because the information coming out of the SIPs in there, which is showing our shortfalls and the gaps that we've got, you know, at least we can rely on that information and use that to do better planning going forward. Now, the issues in terms of cooperation with the other departments are sort of, Grubley said that's about the sanctions. But that's our problem. There is no sanctions being applied for non-performance in terms of slowness. Now, we have no issue that we have to go through the hoops in terms of getting a WULA license, you know, water use license, that we have to do the environment. All of those things are extremely necessary. They're very necessary. We don't promote projects without doing, for instance, a economic impact study. Treasury requires you to show the economic impact returns or the IRRs, etc., before you can have capital, do your capital expenditure, incur your capital expenditure. So we do all of those things. That's not the point. The point is that if people do not provide us with the answers that we require over the necessary licenses within a set period. And that's what we need to do. I say that when this kind of application comes in, you will take 30 days or 40 days or 3 days or 2 minutes so that the implementing agency can plan accordingly. And that is what we require, and sanctions need to be applied on them. And on that particular point, I must politely disagree with the Honourable Member Carter. I don't believe that you've got it right in terms of saying that senior management in Sunrise has been slow in responding. I think you're confusing us with somebody else. I really would like to take that up for the AG as well. I really would like to see that. Because if there's one thing that we do, we can ask the parliamentarians as well, and you guys ask questions, we respond on time. We've always made that. Even if we know that we're going to get a smack on the head, it's fine because it must be deserved. But we do not respond slowly on any issue in that. We do respond in time, but I'm quite happy to take that up with the AG. Now, the issue around going concern, that will cover. My answer now hopefully will cover in terms of what is also around the ETOM. Firstly, let me disagree again politely with Mr. Freitas. Sir, I don't think you and I will ever agree on this issue around the Gauteng Freeway Improvement Project, and let us agree to disagree on that and remain with our opinions. However, I think it's important for us to note that yes, there may be a perception that we did not consult properly or sufficiently. But the courts did not find that. 6 courts, including twice the Constitutional Court, has ruled in favor of Sandra. Now, are we questioning the integrity of our courts unintentionally? Or what is it that we are dissatisfied with as far as that's concerned? And I want to leave it at that. Also, that if you look at the panel which was appointed by the Premier of Gauteng, they did a survey. And in the report, and the report is available on Gauteng's website and other places as well, is that the survey showed, first of all, that the system that we had when we started off before the new dispensation, and I'm going to come and explain the new dispensation, that as far as the burden on the low-income earner was 0.4%. 0.4%. Now, that is the finding of the panel, not Sandra. And that the hybrids that they had recommended, the cheapest one was 1.3% rising to 2.7%. That is the hybrid that they were showing. And that's their research, not Sandra's research. But it showed, actually, that the efforts that SANRAL has made in terms of making sure that the tariffs are affordable were well placed. In similar fashion, they did a survey, carried out a survey, where it shows that 34% of the people that were surveyed, said that the tariffs were reasonable. 27%, and I'm quoting directly out of the report, 27% of the people said that they were neutral on the tariffs. And 38% said that the tariffs were unreasonable. Now, that's not our statistics. That's coming directly out of the report. That is what's happening, the way those numbers are coming from. And it is my contention that a 4% difference between reasonable and unreasonable, tariffs in reasonable and unreasonable, in this very emotionally charged atmosphere, is splitting hairs. By the same token, on the issue on the Winelands, let us read the judgment carefully. The only thing that the court found against SANRAL, is that we are not allowed to toll the roads. Everything else is found in favor of SANRAL. That included the EIA process, etc., which includes the community participation process. And I think we should actually read the judgment carefully, and then that is what we'll see what it says. Now, the going concern, with the help of our deputy president, as you know, that it was in March, May. In May, he announced a new dispensation. And the implementation of the, first of all, what were the requirements of the new dispensation? One, that there'd be a uniform tariff of 30 cents a kilometer, in this case it's for Class A2 vehicles, whether you are a registered a user of the roads or a non-registered user. So there'd be a uniform tariff. That was implemented at the beginning of July already. So soon after the announcement, we had actually introduced that. The second thing that was said, that the monthly caps for a registered user would be reduced by 50%. That has been introduced as well. Also in July, that was also introduced. The third thing that we said in there is that we will be introducing, for the old historical debt, a 60% discount. Now, you need to please note that even with the 60% discount on the historical debt, that those people will be paying 37 cents a kilometer as opposed to 30 cents a kilometer. So those that you have been regularly paying are not disadvantaged in any form whatsoever. That 60% discount, that required some changes to the software and additional hardware, and we're happy to announce that will kick in on the 1st of November. The 60% discount will kick in there. The issue around the occasional user, that will take a little bit more time, but that is on track. And as you members, honorable members will recall, that our deputy president has also said that all of these things will be implemented in phases. So we are on track. Now, the infrequent user, that would be the 33 gantry passes per annum. That will be introduced in the new year, around about April, May of the new year. That is what will happen as far as this is concerned. Now, the issue around the blocking of the licenses, that, as the honorable members know, still have to go through a legislative process. It is going to be in your hands whether you're going to approve that kind of legislation or not. Not in the hands of SANRAL. We've made a proposal to make sure that people obey the laws of our country. Let us not forget, the SANRAL Act makes it very clear. The non-payment of toll is an offence. And if it was not an offence, the person who was found guilty would not have been found guilty. Are we again questioning the integrity of the presiding magistrate? that person has to pay the 15,000 rands that he owes on the toll. Yes, it is true that one of the charges was the falsification of the number plate. There was just that one charge. All the other charges related to the non-payment of toll, and that person is found guilty. And not only has that person had to pay a fine, but that person has to pay the outstanding debt as well, amongst other things. So, honorable members, you know, I think we need to be a bit careful about saying about these matters which have been dealt with by the courts in terms of our interpretation of them. That person has been found guilty for the non-payment of tolls. And let me make an appeal. Let's not be selective in which laws of our country we want to respect and obey and which laws we don't want to. You see, we don't like the look of those laws or those particular laws we find contrary, whether it's our beliefs or our practices. There are laws in our country, and this is one of the reasons why I believe that we have this appalling, horrific road safety record on our roads. We have no respect for that because we have a high propensity for the tolerance of white-collar crime. We make a big noise about it when there's physical crime and that involved. But for white-collar crime, we think, no, I won't get caught, so I'm going to have to pay my fine. I know I'm not going to get caught. And that's a problem. It's not just the issue in terms of that in Taiwan, the people won't cross the road. Yeah, if I go out of this building now, you saw people cross the road, whether it's a zebra crossing or not. And it varies, by the way, in the different parts. And that's why our listening concentration has been on the road safety, on the children to get in early. On the going concern, sir, if you read what the Auditor General said, that the fact that the new dispensation has been announced and that we are implementing it in the phases as planned gives the AG sufficient comfort that SANRAL will be financially viable. Furthermore, we mustn't forget, there are two parts to SANRAL's business. The one part is the non-toll side of it, which is 85% of the portfolio. That 85% of the portfolio is not in question. It's a 15%. And out of that 3,120 kilometers of toll roads that we have, there's 201 kilometers, which is the fuss about. 201 kilometers. It doesn't even constitute a full 1% of the network of South Africa. That's what it is. So the going concern, I believe that with the new dispensation, and especially with the 60% discount starting to kick in at the end of the month, first of November, that is going to go a long way in terms of being able to recover the outstanding debt. The outstanding. Now, there is this issue about the wrong billing and that. Unfortunately, yes, we still rely on our e-NATO system. And it is very unfortunate that the issues which are in front of the courts right now on the e-NATO system haven't come to its conclusion yet. But again, we're very confident that the courts will rule in favor of government. And that will go a long way in helping us in reducing the number of clone plates in there. And I'm sure the honorable members are also aware that the regulations coming to effect, I'm looking at white in January, no? The FICA ones. The regulations come into effect, let me say early in the new year, where it is going to be the responsibility of each one of us as individuals to make sure that our information on the e-NATIS is correct. One of the other suggestions that we have made, and it is under discussion, is that, you know, with the availability these days of hotspots, etc., in our cities and throughout our country, perhaps what government should do is give all of us an email address. A relevant address, xyz@gov.co.za. That's all that we have. So each one of us has an email address, so we start to receive the communications from government through the internet. So we can't turn around and say, I didn't get it, or the mail got lost in the post. But these are the kind of improvements that one is looking at to bring and the lessons that we are learning in terms of how do we make sure that people receive the correct bills and that, and that we're not relying on a database. Now, one of the constraints under which we at Sangha work in terms of databases is that we're not allowed to even use third-party databases. The law doesn't allow us to do that. And we like to believe that we are law-abiding and that we will always work within the framework of the law, so we're not going to circumvent the law to try and get a database which we know exists, which is better than the e-nature system. That's not the field that we operate in, but any assistance on that side would be very useful. See, I don't have the breakdown in terms of the scholarships that we provide, etc., and that, but I can send that to the scholarship. No, we have the bursaries. Yeah. We don't have the scholarship numbers in there. The bursaries are in there. I will send that to the honourable member to show that. Just to point out the WITS program that we got, the Targeting Talent Program, that one is entirely dedicated to the rural areas, specifically the two provinces of Mpumalanga and Limpopo. That's the WITS Targeting Talent Program. Also, again, look, we agree and we've apologized, and I can apologize, I have to apologize again. The issue around the SCM, now those are standard forms, for instance, which are in the tender documents. They're not that the forms were not in the tender document. The bidder didn't complete them. So the people were checking that. And that's what I mean. They just were not vigilant enough. They weren't doing their work properly. We have taken the necessary action. We have brought in more people, and we are going to put in refresher courses in terms of training refresher courses, just for people to understand that why it is important to check that the information that we've asked for is all there. The issue around the clickouts. My colleague got two quotations as opposed to three. And that's sheer laziness. Not that they didn't get the quotation. And yes, the fact that we should have got three and we only got two is in contravention of the triple PFA. We acknowledge that. We do acknowledge that, and we apologize that for that is what's happened. Now the issue on standards of level. This is again tied up with what we were saying earlier in terms of a high-level planning. We're very good in our country on producing documents. Now we've got a policy, the RISFAR policy, and I'm looking to my colleagues again to the right from the department. It's a document and a policy which has also been approved by government 3 years ago now. RISFAR. 3 years ago, yeah? About 3 years ago. But nobody's actioned that. What that does, the document, it clearly stands around and talks about, for instance, the classes of roads. If it's a class one road, these are the specifications for it. And a class one road would serve high mobility, for instance. Class two, class three, etc. What we need to do is start to implement that policy. And then we will find that the differences that we're talking about won't be as glaring as we find it now, because then we'd be able to say, this is a road going through a town. Through this town, we have a class 2 road, and the class 2 road in Polokwane should be the same as it is in Johannesburg, for instance, because of the similarities of the traffic volumes and that it carries around there. That is what we need to do. We have the documents available for us. And again, I believe that that is the responsibility of MINMEC to make sure that we're implementing these things. And it's not just left up to say, yeah, Sandra is doing it, so that's fine, and this province is doing it, it's fine, but that one is not doing it, or that metro is not doing it. We have those. We have those. So that we don't have this differentiation in terms of these tenders. And the tragedy that took place yesterday in Johannesburg, it is tragic. It doesn't belong to Sandra. Nor the bridge, nor the road over there. The road is the Gauteng Road, and the work being done there is for my city of Johannesburg. So I'm involved in both ways in terms of Gauteng, coming from Gauteng and living in Johannesburg. it's a tragedy that has happened. The investigations are taking place. As the honourable members are sure are aware, the investigations are done independently by the department, led by the Department of Labour. So I'm sure the contractor will do his and hers as well. The city will do, but the city as a client is also responsible in terms of the supervision, etc. But our OSH Act, Occupational Health and Safety Act, is a very, very good piece of document that we've got. And that puts in it clearly in terms of what the responsibilities are of the client, whether it is Sunral or anybody else, what the responsibility of the engineer is, what the responsibility of the contractor is, and what the role of each one is in there. It is spelled out over there. But this is a tragedy that has happened. I'm sure the investigation will show us whether it was negligence on the part of the design or negligence on the part of the construction, or was it something else that had happened over there, and that is why we had this unfortunate tragedy yesterday in Johannesburg. Okay, I've spoken about the slow response, etc., on the thing. Let's talk about the Swartzegans Plaza. Yeah? We will take it up with the AG, because we don't believe that that is true. We will take it up. You know, the AG's office was here. We have spoken to them now about the thing. The issue around Swartzegans Plaza. First of all, when you pay the 75 range at that particular plaza, you'd have used 162 kilometers of the road. That is what you'd have used around there. But everybody forgets that 75 range is only paid by the occasional user. If you live within a particular radius, and we've got it mapped out, to the plaza, close to the plaza, where you don't have another option or another alternative to use, you get a 95% discount. Now everybody forgets the discount regime. You get a 95% discount, so you're paying R3.75. That is what you're paying. You are not paying the 75 rands. By the same token, that if you live in the Groot Marico area, and you get a 75% discount. A 75% discount, so you're paying R18.75, and the reason I know this is because last week Monday we had a meeting with the province, etc. So the reason why I'm remembering these numbers, I've not been selective in what I remember. And by the same token, if you have come from Zierist, there is a discount regime, and I need to check what the discount regime is. The people living in Zierist get a 15% discount. Now, what we've done, which was announced last week, is that we've extended the areas for the areas which qualify for these discounts. And that is what we've done. So there's a larger group of people who will be qualifying for these discounts, and we've also introduced a frequent user discount for all of the people there as well. So not only will you continue, a larger number of people will continue to use to get these discounts, but also the frequent user discount has been introduced as well. Furthermore on this, and you know, this is what happens typically, is that if you look at the people who qualify for the 95% discount, there's more people registered in this area than actually cars in this area, if we will come and use an address to get the discount. But we please, folks, let us take into account that there is a discount regime. Secondly, if you look at it, and I'm quite happy to send you the map, where you can look at the alternatives that people have. And these are good alternatives, not poor alternatives. These are good alternatives that if I want to travel from Rustenburg to Mahikeng, for argument's sake, yeah, that I have an alternative. Or even if I want to go to Zierist, I do not have to go to the Swartzegans Plaza. And you must see some of the improvements which are taking place along that road as well. It's a phased implementation, the expansion of the works which are taking place around there. Now, we thought that we had covered the issue around irregular expenditure. I've explained as to how the irregular expenditure occurred. The irregular expenditure occurred because of those routine road maintenance contracts. And again, if you see this, we have said previously, and we say again, because the routine road maintenance contracts that we've awarded are for a minimum of 3 years, and if they perform well, et cetera, and so forth, it can go on to 5 years. So you will see that for another 2 years as well, that been mentioned in terms of irregular expenditure. That is the old historical stuff, which is now been working now. We have stopped awarding contracts on the basis of the statistical method that we've used for calculation of the benchmark. We've stopped doing that. And I can start showing you how the SMMEs are starting to suffer already. So on the one side, yes, we got accusing of irregular expenditure, but we forget on the other side the consequences of that particular action. But like I said earlier, Chair, it's not all doom and gloom. The new draft regulations in the triple PFA, I believe, are going a long way in terms of dealing with that. And I will contend that I don't believe that ours is 70% of the irregular expenditure. I will do the sums and I will come back, but I find that hard to believe. Chair, I think that I've covered all the points which were raised around over there. And last but not least, Mr. De Freitas, let's agree to disagree on how can you and I come from the same province. You can talk about it on another day.
Honourable members, electricity duty, can we get the next? Okay. Honourable Ramatakana. Okay. I agree.
Others just go out and eat.
And come back.
When we don't have an official break. No, it's not right.
It's definitely, you're correct, Honourable Member.
Well, because there's no sittings, they will be leaving it just after 4.
Just after 8, after yeah, 4.
Half past, half past 4. But, you know, Chair, I really have a problem. I really have a problem with it. I have no objection to bringing my own food, or if we get a break, to go buy my own food. But to sit here to bring medication and you haven't had anything to eat in 8-9 hours. I really think that it is poor organizing from the committee side. And it, we just cannot tolerate it. Tell us, we'll bring our own lunch boxes and we'll sit and we'll eat it. But there are so many other people too here.
Some of the things that I was asking the committee secretary here to say, but how do we work up until very late when nothing has been provided? We may as well call it quits. And come back some other day, because we have to go out and go and look for food outside. Very sluggish, whoever has decided that this is how we're going to do work, is very sluggish also from that part. Honorable Ramatlakane, you had an issue. Honorable Masangayi, it was not on Sandra. Okay. Honorable Ramatlakane, and then we'll be able to take a break. Can we take 30 minutes?
Chairperson, let me propose something.
Okay.
I think this not, is a serious, we also acknowledge what the Honourable Member is raising. But already, also, Department of Interior are here. What I propose from our side, let's make grab a smash. Maybe one or two go outside and pick what you pick and come back. We continue. Because I'm scared of one thing. We're all complaining about wasteful in the air. What is it in management, whatever. And since they are here, let's continue. We can maybe break for after this presentation, as you indicated earlier, for 5 minutes and come back.
Honorable members, we can send somebody to go buy lunch for us while we're continuing. There's officials here who can be able to do that. Honorable Ramatlakane, you had an issue on Sandra.
I'm not scared of you raising the issue given the
the current debate. But let me just say that I just wanted to check Mr. Ali that the comment from the AG is not quite what you say. If you read the comment, unless we're having two different notes from the AG, but if I were to read this one paragraph from the AG, it calls to doubt. It measures whether it actually question the management judgment. So if you read it, it says if I were to read it for you, it says in the management's judgment, it is not probable that the economic benefit associated with a transaction would flow to the entity, and the amount of the revenue to be recognized could be measured reliably. So the question that I was raising was more like a plan. I was asking you the plan, but you chose to take the other route, which is unfortunate route that you took. But I still want to say, perhaps, given that if you have not thought through that particular question, you could write it and consider the question, write back to the committee secretary so that once we finalize our report next Tuesday, we have a fuller understanding about that. Because otherwise, our job is not complete if we don't get a complete answer in terms of the plan. The issue is the plan to address that particular question.
Thank you very much. Normally I give people 48 working hours, so Monday is fine. thank you very much, Mr. Ali. And I think you have taken cognizance of the fact that we are raising issues of standards and what have you. Would also expect an answer from yourself, from the department, as to what exactly is happening. This is not the first time that the committee is raising this matter. Honorable Sibandela is giving an example of N11 as you enter MLO. That when you enter from the N11, it's good. When you enter MLO, it's just shabby. It's going to be when you leave the town. N17, yeah. It's not N11. But it's the same all over with all these national roads that, like Honorable Masongani has really indicated, that the standards and the how things are being done. Policy is just, it's a policy matter, which actually would expect you to do the same thing. Likewise, 48 hours, you are able to respond to us and tell us as to what are the things that, as the department, you think should be able to happen. Thank you very much. You're released. CBRTA.
Yes, I'm going to go to the operation. and they say that you know then that's the way, no lunch is delayed. Lunch is delayed. I come on the now we think
Are you getting it right? Can we start? There's a computer glitch, but she has been helping all the other committees.
Yeah, what she has been helping others, and then our laptop died.
Ah.
She was using laptop, so we killed ourselves in helping others.
What is the key? Good afternoon. We apologize that CBRTA has been here the whole day. They are just as hungry as we are. And indicate that we are almost an hour and 30 minutes behind schedule. We have just been very kind of laser fair, allowing people to just explain themselves. It's that time of the year where we believe that we should be able to make just an introspection. Have you been able to succeed in terms of what you have termed yourself to be, to achieve your predetermined objectives? Have you complied with the laws? is everything in order. I must also indicate that it is quite kind of appeasing that as we are dealing with the department and its parastatus, there's not one which actually has got a qualified, so at least even if it's an unqualified with matters of emphasis, we take pride in that to say it's getting there. Very soon we'll have everybody having a clean audit. It's just a matter of doing things the right way as per the requirement by the AG's office. I'm going to give to you as a member of the board, and you will be able to introduce your team as to who is here and fire on.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, whoever is left here. These guys only cater for themselves. I hope you all have ability to cater for yourselves too. So it's not a very good and assuring message we're getting from Parliament. But all the same, thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing us, CDRTA, to the opportunity to present ourselves, our annual report, and the AG's report to yourselves. The focus for the past year under review was on interventions aimed specifically at enhancing delivery capacity, addressing challenges facing the sector, including operator challenges, facilitating seamless cross-border transport, which at the end of the day is our most important objective, and improving regulation of the cross-border movement. At the center of our delivery model is collaboration and cooperation with various stakeholders who have an interest and a role in cross-border movement and movements within the various corridors. To this extent, the agency participates in the BMA Water Management Agency establishment. We also partake in various other forums or fora involving local and regional stakeholders and operators. Our key challenge, and this is important, our key challenge, the Concord ruling, a successful challenge, or our loss at the Concord ruling, the successful challenge by operators on the permit fee increase in 2011, the Concord ruling was now in May 2015. Secondly, this has led to others, the ongoing court challenges on the 2014 tariff regulations. So we have this challenge about courts, going to court constantly. As a board, we are taking these and other challenges very seriously, and we are constantly engaging with the shareholder around financial assistance as well as the agency's funding model. At this juncture, I would like to hand over to our CEO, Sipho Khumalo, to present our annual report and hopefully answer many of your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Moses. Let me start by introducing the team. On my left is Mr. Moses Scott. He's a member of the board. On my right is the CFO, Nhlaope Mayepa. On his right is Lorraine Ngube, who's a senior manager in the office of the CEO. And I'm Sipho Khumalo, I'm the CEO. I'll be taking you through the presentation. Chairperson, I'm mindful of the fact that your committee is rather tired. I will not bore you by going through some of the details that I presume we all know. Issues like your mission statements and so on. I will try and zero in on what is important for today. Just to give you a sense of what we will cover in the presentation, is we'll touch briefly on the mandate and strategic imperatives of the agency. We'll give you a review of our organizational performance, progress on strategic projects, particularly AUKUS and market access regulation. We will talk on the strategic partnerships. We'll talk on development and empowerment programs, our employment equity, our financial information. We'll then zero in on the audit outcomes, which is really the essence based on the presentations we were listening to. Seems that's what the committee is really interested in. and we will give you a sense of what the future perspective looks like from our point of view, and then we'll give you concluding remarks. So, President, like I said, I will not take too much time. This is our vision, our mission, and strategic goals. It's all detailed there, and I'm sure we've covered this ground before, so with your permission, I would like not to delve into that. And just on the issue of our mandate and strategic imperatives, just to highlight quickly that we really exist as an agency primarily for the purpose of eliminating impediments. Our job is to eliminate impediments in the flow of passengers and freight between South Africa and our neighboring countries. So our primary role, our reason for existence, is to assist the movement of people and goods across our borders and to try and make it as to happen as quickly as possible and as efficiently as possible, and to eliminate all those factors that may be reasons for the delays or for reasons for the movement not to move as quickly as it would otherwise. We were also established to introduce regulators' competition in this area. This was shortly after South Africa was reintegrated into the African continent and the SADC region. You remember at the time there was no mechanism for regulating passenger transport movements on a cross-border basis. So this agency was established to introduce that, which we've done successfully. And thirdly, was to liberalize market access in respect to the movement of freight. The idea being, of course, to reduce the cost of doing business and the cost of transport in particular, so that you'd enable greater regional integration and greater trade amongst the SADC members and the African countries in general. These are the primary reasons why this agency was established. Of course, operational constraints were seen as a big factor that would prevent this efficient movement of people and goods, and therefore one of our tasks was to reduce those operational constraints. And the instrument we use in doing that is facilitation, which is very analogous to the work that is done by DERCO, in the sense that we also have our counterparts, we meet with our counterparts, and we have forums very similar to the forum that DERCO has in terms of achieving that objective. And last two is we establish also to strengthen the capacity of the public sector, especially in respect to strategic planning and planning and projecting into the future and being able to focus in respect to what our borders, the capacity that our borders can carry, our border posts can carry, and the enhancements that need to be introduced. And lastly, to build industry partnerships with a view to empowering the road transport industry. Just to give you a sense of the environment in which we operate, Chairperson, the map there attempts to depict our major corridors, and what is important there is that there are 52 land border posts between South Africa and our neighboring countries. Of the 52 borders that you can see depicted there, 19 are designated as commercial border posts, which means it's posts where the movement of goods and people from a commercial point of view takes place. There are 4 big border posts that carry 70% of the traffic, and these are Beitbridge, Libombo, Maseru, and Skelspasek. So those are the 4 major borders that carry 70% of all traffic between South Africa and our neighboring countries. These borders are located in the busiest corridors, which are depicted on that map, linking South Africa to our neighboring countries. The North-South Corridor, which goes through Beitbridge, the Trans-Kalahari Corridor, which someone spoke about, where Swartdrakens is and that expensive toll gate is, and Maputo N4, of course, the N4 corridor, what is known as the Maputo Development Corridor. Key players in the border environment, Chairperson, it's important to understand this because transport is not the only player there. It's the Department of Home Affairs, who, from a constitutional point of view, have the mandate of ensuring that looking after migration issues and ensuring that no unwanted persons are allowed into the country. You have the South African Revenue Services that are responsible for customs duties at the border posts. You have the South African Police, who have a border dedicated unit, which is called Border Police. You have Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, and of course you have Port Health and the State Security Agency. So those are the key players in this environment in which we operate, and we work in close collaboration and partnership with them, because a lot of what we try to do, we will not be able to achieve without their cooperation and support. Chairperson, moving into organizational performance quickly,
We had 13 targets, indicators, that we thought out of the 13 we achieved 9. So we didn't structure this such that would achieve 100%, 100%. We were hoping aspirationally to achieve 13, and we were only able to achieve 9 of the 13, which means it translates to 69% of the target that we achieved on a full 100% basis, which represents any overall improvement of 4% from the previous financial year, but notably it's not 100% of the targets that we had set for ourselves. Just to give you some notable strategic achievements as well, and here we've taken it back to 2010, and the reason being, in 2010 we started this major turnaround exercise within cross-border, and we have been keeping track of what we've achieved. You'd remember, Chairperson, that there was a 10-point plan that we introduced in 2010, which we produced before yourself, and at the time, all the bullets that are there were raised, and we're happy to say that of all those bullets, in terms of the turnaround that was defined, 7 are now green and 3 remain yellow. And even those that are yellow, there's at least progress. It's just that we haven't really achieved or gotten where we were intending to go. If I may just cover some issues that pertain to this Chairperson, is that we are aware that more work still needs to be done to solidify the working relationships with the freight industry. We believe we've established a very, very fantastic relationship with the passenger in air transport industry. But on the freight side, there's still more work. And we also welcome the addition in the board of people with freight experience who should serve as a bridge to help us to build stronger and solid relationships with the freight industry. And as an agency, we work very closely with the road transport branch within the Department of Transport. That relationship has improved tremendously and has enabled us to actually rely heavily on the department to open certain doors for us. Yet there are still unresolved issues which pertain to issues of integrated planning and areas of duplication between ourselves and the department. The agency, as you would know, was established in 1998, and that means we have been in existence for 17 years. And in that period, we have mastered 3 unqualified audit opinions over the last 3 years. Prior to that, this agency had never had an unqualified audit opinion. So from our point of view, we've made a tremendous progress, and we're very hopeful that this time we're going to have a clean audit record. We came very close, but we didn't quite make it, but we are still proud of the fact that for the last 3 years consistently, we've maintained an unqualified audit opinion, whereas in the last 17 years, that had never happened until 2012-2013. You would remember, Chairperson, that not so long ago, in fact today, what has happened is what used to happen historically. When we would come to this committee, we would always be the agency that gets the last lot on the last day. So today we are remarking, saying it looks like history is repeating itself. Because that was the time when every member of committee would be tired, or most of the committee members would be gone and so on. But we were given that because we were really not enjoying any respect in this committee. Nothing good was expected of us. And we were able to turn that around quite nicely, and in the last 2 years we started seeing ourselves. So today I said, oh, I hope this is not a sign of things to come. I just hope it's just
don't worry, this is the first day of dealing with the parastatus. Tomorrow the others are still coming.
Oh, all right.
So you may be the last for today.
But definitely not the last. All right. I appreciate that, Chairperson. We've been trying to share this image of being the ones who take the last lot on the last day because nothing good was expected of us. But Chairperson, I can safely say that today, unlike the CBRT of the past, we have executives that can be trusted to represent us and our work in any platform where we may be called upon to talk about the CBRTA. We may not all be experts on all matters pertaining to international transport and its dynamics, but we are all very confident and capable of representing our mandate, and we are all able to navigate ourselves through any terrain on matters that impact on our work. And that, we think, is tremendous progress, and we think a lot of good work has been achieved in terms of turning this agency around. So we are proud of this record, Chairperson, and we also wanted to highlight this to yourselves. Coming to the specifics of key achievements, Chairperson, Market access regulation. This is a tool that we've developed that allows the regulatory committee, when they issue permits, not to do it by thumbsucking. It's a scientific tool that assesses market demand and market supply. And through this tool, the regulatory committee is able to say, on any given corridor, what is the level of supply of taxi operations on that corridor? What is the level of demand? And therefore, it allows us to make intelligent decisions and for the regulatory committee to actually do its work on a scientific basis rather than on the basis of thumbsucking. We've also established business cooperatives that attracted 38 women and 12 youth into the agency, and this is in part trying to encourage historically black and women, people who were not part of the trade business on cross-border corridors, to introduce them into business opportunities in this space. In terms of law enforcement, we have introduced what we've called a smart law approach. Smart law is informed by the fact that a person who will never have, from a footprint point of view, the numbers that we require to cover all shifts across all 52 border posts in South Africa. But what we do is we try and do things on a basis of using intelligence, of saying, when are the contraband likely to be crossing? When are the unwanted and the people who are actually taking chances likely to do it? So we actually deploy our resources, even though we don't have enough resources, on a smart basis by targeting those hours when people are likely to take chances, which is generally after hours, generally after 10, when they assume there's no one who's watching, and that's when wrong things tend to happen. And we've had some very good opportunities of actually catching people doing some wrong things on our corridors, and some of these you would have read about in the media as well. We've signed also an important memorandum of understanding with the South African Revenue Services, and this will enable us to ensure that no truck or bus is able to cross our borders without carrying a cross-border permit. So even though we may not have inspectors everywhere, but SARS will also do our work on our behalf in a roundabout way, because if they also need to check for a cross-border permit, if you're not carrying that permit, they will not let you through. We've also concluded a feasibility study on the operator compliance accreditation scheme. We believe this is a groundbreaking initiative, and that can go a long way in terms of assisting us to be able to clean up the quality of operators on cross-border corridors. But we also believe that this tool could actually be adopted even domestically to ensure that it's not an entitlement for people to be able to move across our borders, but only those that are actually meet the criteria are able to do so. In terms of inspections, Jefferson, we've had a 4% increase. If you look at, we're comparing it between 2013 and 2014, and we're comparing with 2014-15. You've noticed that the difference has grown by 8,484 from 211,789 to 220,273. Prosecutions due to improved compliance has dropped by 15%, and compliance rate has improved also by 8%. This one is a slide that gives you a sense of the differences of, you'd notice that more than 70% of the permits that we issue to freight operators. This is followed by the passenger taxi operators, then followed by your buses and tourists, which occupy a very small part of that slide. But in terms of the numbers, Jefferson, the worrying thing here is that if you look at buses, from 2013 to 2014, there's a slight drop. The numbers have dropped from 2,781 to 2,234. Freight also, we've dropped from 63,934 to 62,647. We do not know whether this is more reflecting on what's happening in the economy generally, or there's something we need to be worried about. But taxis has reversed the trend, but also it's just a significant growth from 11,062 to 11,633. Tourism has also seen a slight growth from 2,246 to 2,370. So overall, our numbers of the permits we've issued have dropped from 80,024 to 78,884. Just on the strategic projects, I've already spoken about operator compliance accreditation scheme. I just want to give you a sense of what now needs to happen, Chairperson. We need to finalize the so-called engagements, particularly with our counterparts in the region, so that this scheme is adopted across the board, because it will serve no purpose to adopt OCAS only in South Africa, and then when you move to Zimbabwe or any of our neighboring countries, we are still faced with the same impediments. So for OCAS to work effectively, we must at least make sure that it's adopted across at least three countries within a corridor, so that the operators get the full benefit of utilizing OCAS. And we also are currently developing an information technology platform to support the system, which we are also negotiating, because the idea is to pilot OCAS. We're intending to do it with Zimbabwe originally, but it looks like Botswana is more keen on piloting the system with us. In terms of market access regulation, this is a scientific tool, as I have explained, that assists the regulatory committee to make a determination of supply and demand on every corridor, and thus inform the decisions to issue or not to issue a permit. Again, where we are at now, we are engaging on this system with our stakeholders who are piloting the system within the regulatory committee, and we're also conducting a pilot on three main corridors. Those are the targets for the new financial year. But the system has been developed, the system is up and running, and it's going. Chairperson, just to touch on strategic partnerships that we've developed, this was an issue that was raised quite sharply in our appearance last time before this committee. We have established partnerships at the regional level with the SADC Secretariat, joint committee, joint route management groups. At provincial level, we've actually met with every transport MEC with a view to introducing an integrated approach in the manner in which inter-provincial passenger transport movements are regulated and cross-border transport is regulated. At national level, we are participating in the Border Management Agency, the Interagency Steering Forum, which is led by the Department of Home Affairs. We also have partnerships with the Department of Home Affairs itself, SARS, National Intelligence Coordinating Committee, National Joint Operational and Intelligence Structures, which is known as NetJoints. Internally, we have a labor consultative forum with our own unions, POPCRU, which is the dominant union. We have route committees with all the operators on the different routes on which we issue permits. We have operator forums where we engage with the operators on the challenges they experience when they cross our borders. We have also stakeholder forums with the other sister departments that also have a role to play in the border post. And we have joint law enforcement initiatives that we embark upon with our counterparts from the different countries. And we also look after SMME development initiatives using those forums. At a local level, we also are partnering with the metros and the district municipalities. On empowerment front, we have a formal training program on road transport inspectorate. Last year, we trained 21 youth, of which 20 of the 21 were absorbed as road transport inspectors. 11 of those were females. In terms of the CBRT employment equity, females currently represent 51% of our workforce, males 49%, and a total of 50% of the executive management team is made up of women. We're very proud of that, Jefferson. And a total of 35% of the organization is made up of employees who are less than 35 years of age, which means a huge component of our workforce is actually youth members. Recently, the minister led an engagement at Malelane with 60 girl children in grades 10 and 11 on various career prospects in transport, and we are happy that the minister will be doing this something similar this coming Monday in Upington, and it's a model that she actually stole from us. So we are happy that we are sharing success as small as we are. Moving to financial overview, Chairperson. What you see there is restated figures, Chairperson. What we had to do is, because of the Constitutional Court judgment that went against us on the 12th of May this year, we've had to restate our financial figures for the last financial year. So the figures that you would have had in the annual report of last year and the figures that I'm showing here for 13-14 are different. Because at the time, that was still a contingent liability, but it has since realized as a debt. So it's no longer recognized as a contingent liability. It's now fully realized as a debt. So permit income has dropped for last year to 42.34 million to provide for the liability, for this year is 166 million. Penalty income has also dropped to 35.5 million, and for this year is 34.57 million. And other income, this is like your interest, stamps and postage, has dropped to 1.16 million, and this year is only 0.45 million. Interest received is 5.98 million, this year is 5.53 million. And in terms of the employee cost, the expenses side, employee costs have grown from 118.19 million to 131.99 million. Operating expenses have grown from 69.14 million to 72.93 million. So in essence, our total figures last year, we ended up with the restated figures with a deficit of 367.19 million, which is, means that that's out of the money that we've had to provide for the debt that is now realized. So that's what you have there, Chairperson. In terms of the assets and liabilities, again, we're showing you the receivables in the previous financial year, the cash and cash equivalents, our non-current assets, and we're showing you the comparison between last year and this year. But the key figure that I want to draw to your attention, Chairperson, is the accumulated deficit. We had an accumulated deficit of 258 million last year, which has grown to 255.68 million this year. And this, as I said again, is because of that key factor brought about by the Constitutional Court. In terms of irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, last year we had fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 2,000, and this is not 200, two, it's 2,000 rand and 224, and that was the offer. This year we have no fruitless and wasteful expenditure. Irregular expenditure, last year we had 827,753, which has dropped to 534,938. And we're happy that there's no fruitless and wasteful expenditure in the year under review, and even the irregular expenditure is as a result of transactions contracted for in the previous year, nothing that happened in the current financial year. So it's really a legacy thing around lease contracts that were terminated during the current financial year, but which were entered into in the previous financial years. Audit outcomes, this is really our pride, Chairperson, to say in 17 years of our existence, we've demonstrated a track record, and we've demonstrated it was not a fluke what we achieved in 2012-13 by repeating it in 13-14 and repeating it in 14-15 again. Like I say, our intention is really to move into a clean administration, and we are very sad that we couldn't because of legacy issues coming from the previous financial year. We are also happy to say that we've received an unqualified audit opinion for the third year in a row, and we really think that we're very close to getting a clean audit report. That's in terms of the audit outcomes, Chairperson. There are no material audit adjustments to our annual financial statement. The only issue that has been raised by the Auditor General as a matter of emphasis is the issue of a going concern. That because of our liabilities are in excess of our assets by 255,677,223, that actually means we are technically insolvent. And it indicates a material uncertainty that may cast a significant doubt on our ability to continue as a going concern, and also raises questions of our ability to discharge our liabilities in the normal course of doing business. And we also want to draw your attention to the fact that we've had to restate the corresponding figures for 31st March 2014. These were restated due to the adjustment event which was dictated by the outcome of the Constitutional Court on the 12th of May, and as a fair value adjustment relating to the previous financial year. The conclusion reached by the audit is that there were no material findings that were found on usefulness and reliability of reported performance information, and internal control deficiency resulting in non-compliance with legislation regarding expenditure management comes from an incident we had with the irregular expenditure that I've referred to. Looking into the future, the key issue, Chairperson, as it's clear from everything I've said, is there's a need for a more sustainable mechanism for funding our operations, and we are exploring. You'd remember that at one stage last year we asked to bring our sustainability strategy before this committee, which we presented to this committee. And really, we are not just sitting back and waiting for assistance, because we know there is no money from fiscals, and ours is really to look at, creatively look for alternative revenue sources to keep ourselves afloat, and that's what we are focusing our energies on. We are of the view, though, Chairperson, that normatively speaking, law enforcement is a function that should not be funded on the basis of a user pay principle, and on that basis we think that at the minimum that part of our work needs to be funded from fiscals. We are engaging the minister also, and we really have no short-term escape mechanism but to play by the rule book, and we need to obtain really the buy-in of other role players. But at the same time, what we're doing from our side is developing this strategy where we're looking at reciprocity, and this is really where other countries are charging South African operators for flying their trade in those countries. We think it's only fair that we reciprocate by also introducing road user charges in South Africa, and we would seek your assistance and support in realizing this objective as a committee. In respect to our mandate, we are part of the process that is busy reviewing our mandate and also looking into our critical albatross around our next person, which you know about, the issue of Free State Lesotho. It remains an albatross around our neck. Things remain abnormal in the sense that there is no one playing their trade freely on those corridors, and quite a number of cross-border operators have had their vehicles repossessed by the banks because they are not allowed to actually use their vehicles on those corridors. And we still think that this abnormality at some point needs to be corrected, and we are relying on the leadership and guidance of our yourself, Chairperson, and our political principals in the form of the minister to provide leadership on this one. Lesotho itself is not happy with us. We've had engagements with them as recent as last week, and in those meetings it's very clear that Lesotho as a country is actually very unhappy with the state of affairs as it's currently obtained on the ground. But it's really one of those that unless we all approach this matter from a common point of view with an equal level of determination, it's going to be very difficult to correct it. Chairperson, looking into the future, we're initiating individual country profiles and introducing measures to counter restrictive strategies of each of those countries, and this is where the issue of road user charges is coming in. We're upskilling and mentoring cooperatives that we've introduced for prospective cross-border business uptake in respect to youth and women interventions that we're making. We're also developing a structured and a systematic approach for attempting to report the operator constraints, and we're rolling out smart policing and smarter avenues of enforcement, given the fact that we don't have enough officers on the ground to cover all the corridors and to cover all the shifts within the corridor. And we're also developing a business case on the need for an integrated passenger transport regulatory framework. And we're looking at financial sustainability options with a view to increase our baseline by revenue of 20%, because it's become clear that we can't continue to just rely on permits. And we're the only agency, as you know, Chairperson, that is 100% self-funding, that gets no cent from Treasury. Chairperson, that brings me to the end of our report, and I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was short and to the point. Honourable members, there we are. CBRTA has made a presentation. Maybe from my side, let me just check with yourself what are the implications in terms of the Concord outcomes with your revenue generation. What will be the implications as the AG has indicated that you are a going concern?
but also the discussions with the minister. Where is it heading in terms of the user pay principle that they are insisting that you should be able to sustain this very important portfolio? Do you think it will be able to yield fruits? Are there alternatives that one can be able to look into in terms of this very portfolio? The last one from me will be, how do you intend to deal with the deficit as it's seen here within your financial statement? Because obviously it's going to impact into the future. That kind of an approach definitely will be able to impact onto the future. But I must indicate that it's long overdue that you should reciprocate, because I know for sure that African countries, they don't take kind to freight that comes from South Africa, even taxes that comes from South Africa. They really go for a cutthroat. Let's do the same thing. We can't continue being generous and really allow people to take advantage of people who are trying to do business in a very fair manner. Honourable members, Honourable Sibande, Honourable Masongai, Honourable De Freitas, you'll be the last one.
Chairperson, umntunga uzelele wathi wathayathi. What's the reason? Okay, but I'll try to. Okay, Chairperson, I'll start by maybe uploading them about the comments from the auditor general. Not so bad, but nevertheless, we're supposed to ask you so that you can maybe try and touch them, put some screws. Chairperson, my first one is, it will be slide number 19. The very same matter which you commented about, I want also to comment about is that, you see, there is an worrying factor which spoke about the key challenges and intervention. I think as a country, we have signed protocols and protocols with SADC, as well as with Lesotho. So what worries Lesotho then? Because another thing from the own on this is bulletin number 2, that is, there is a task team, all the staff and the program of action. You see, what remains from us, even in the past, was the implementation of the program of action. That's where we had the weakness. That's where we have, because already we have identified problem and we had the solution. But as long as you not implement what was agreed upon, that's where the problem will start. And then with one, this is one. Somewhere there is a slide which is talking about the issue of permits. That I think it's a dropping of issuing permits. Or slide number 8. You see, I'll remind you once more, even there, I don't think we do so much challenge. Because in the past, what was their challenge? I think it's now addressed, since we have shown you that you are interacting now with the departments as well as also with the ministry. There was an allegation that this side, you issued permits, this side municipalities are issued permits. If you address that, I don't think that we can have a problem. I don't think so, that we can have a problem. As well as another thing which I wanted to share with you, you go to in the input you said about that the entire borders are 52. I'm not sure whether the correct is 52. If they are 52, then here will be my question. We do have those small tunnels. I can't call them a border gate. If you go to Mpumalanga, if you go to Barberton, they are on top. There is a small border gate. And I won't refer back things, because there was a bad thing which happened in the past, whereby it was alleged that there was a truck full of illegally cigarettes, but it was caught. The police caught it. So we must take care of them as well. As well as the tunnel in Buzini. It's not opening always, but people are using it. I'm citing an example. Unlike those who are just crossing illegally, but I mean in a channel which is organized, where you can go there and see that there is a structure from the government side. I don't know whether they are included in this 52. And then again, you see with the 10 points, if you go to slide number 5 with the 10 points, there is a bulletin which I've identified which I wanted to maybe emphasize something with that one. Where, yes, so with the 10 points, notable strategic achievements. You see, with number 9, developing leadership, cohesion at all levels. What I would recommend, Chairperson, to you, I think you must deal with that matter. Because if you do have a structure, if there's no cooperation within the structure itself, that's where we are experiencing problem. Whereby, in terms of it was to accounting, some people are not cooperating. They are not bringing some reports. They bring reports late and the like. So you must start with this one as a priority. But so far, I know these 10 points you given by us as members, but you have achieved them, that is good. But if you can focus on that one as well, that make sure that you go to it. And the other one is slide 6, which you speak about the establishment of business cooperatives. You see, I support the cooperatives. You said attracted 38 women and 12 youth. But I'll clarify something with that one. I saw somewhere another slide when you spoke about the issue of education with Mpumalanga and the like. My worry is one. I will emphasize again. People who are supposed to benefit the most with some of this are the people from the rural masses. Because that's where the borders are situated. To me, it is very difficult to say you tell me about the co-ops while I don't know this one, which co-ops are from where. But if you will talk about co-ops from Gauteng, co-ops from Western Cape, co-ops from, to me, it's painful. Because the most affected people, that's where the things are happening, from the borders. Because there was the thing which was raised by a chairperson earlier on about the issue of taking people on board, educating them, and all that. I think the chairperson was correct. Also to emphasize, some of this co-op must be part of, because we still have a challenge. I can't remember when, during the presidential statement in one of the years, where he was speaking about job creation, where he requested each and every department or entities to have programs in terms of job creation. I will support it if it falls part of the job creation, but this number of scale, I will propose that in the next, maybe to increase, but focus also in the rural masses. And then, what is the last one? You see, please, I wanted you to comment about this one. As we're having a lot of protocols, I mean, somewhere in the slide, you were talking about, I can't remember the slide, where you were talking about some of, in terms of achievements, whereby you never spoke about the issue of stakeholders. You spoke, yes, of course, now strategic partnerships. You see, this plan, I think it's perfect. But Chairperson, to you as well, I'm a little bit worried about the shareholders. The question will be then, by when are you involving the shareholders? as you know that you sometimes, I know that you said nationally, you spoke about the Asian SARS and the like. I'm not sure. Within the entities, those who are sharing the very same responsibilities, how often are we interacting with them? Because with this one, it's covered. The only snake is the stakeholders. It must involve also stakeholders. Because with the issue of national and provincial, yes, MINMEC is there, whatever. I can call it a MINMEC. So that's all for the 10%. I think we're not touched today. Just to motivate.
Honorable Sauvagny.
Thank you, Chairperson. welcome the report and the unqualified audit. Chairperson, when we met the Auditor General in September, what he emphasized was that his focus is that entities should get unqualified audits. This thing of clean audit is a new phenomenon. And you can't pin anybody down legally to say you have been achieved a clean audit. It's not there in the PFMA. Because we wanted this clarity as a SCOWAC, the Standing Committee on Auditor General. So he clarified us that this forecast is for entities and departments to get unqualified audits. This thing of clean, and I think it was more emphasized by local government during the era of Minister Stelo. So I think we must be clear as to what is it that we are expecting from entities and departments, so that people should not come here and think we are looking for something clean and whatever. We are looking for unqualified audits. If there are matters of emphasis and stuff like that, we'll have to deal with them. So I thought this matter must be clarified, because we might be laboring here, sitting here, thinking that we are looking for clean audits from entities and departments. It's not so, Chairperson. So we must commend departments and entities when they get the unqualified audits. Because here, I think the other issue that was raised, it was a credit card. Maybe the CEO can clarify. The Auditor General has picked up an issue of misuse of credit cards, whether it is credit cards across or it was one credit card. What actually happened to an extent that it became an issue in the Auditor General's report that it was not corrected by the time the Auditor General issued out the opinion? The other issue, Chairperson, is the targets. They have met 69% out of 100. Are they here in the report, those 13 targets, so that I don't bother them to say they must give us the report? If they can tell me the page where they are, so that we know on which target did they perform, they got the 69, and where are the other four, and which divisions are responsible for the other four, like we did with Prasa, that they perform below average. Those ones, after all, it was worse. Here, they are almost 69. So that those who perform should be commended. Because you see, Chairperson, there's this thing that because we got so much percentage across the board, you are not going to get bonuses. It's wrong. It's very wrong. Those who perform should be rewarded. Whether they are two or one, we must acknowledge. Those who don't perform, there must be consequences, including disciplinary action, when it's due. Because I come from a public sector, I know sometimes HODs, MECs were very harsh to say, ah, you see, we got this percentage, no bonus this year. But it's wrong. You are wrong to people who spend sleepless nights, who are not with their families, and do very well, and then you don't reward them for good performance. So, I thought I have to raise that chapter. And why some trans people are so demoralized in the public sector is that we arrive in meetings and say, you are all bad here. But why is the institution running when everybody is bad? It's not collapsing, it's there. It is because there are people who dedicate their efforts to make sure that that institution runs 24/7. And there are people who don't sleep. To run this cross border, it means there are people who don't sleep in winter when we are asleep. And because cross borders, I mean, these days, they run throughout 24/7 in most cases. Like where I come from in Limpopo, Bay Bridge is, I think, is one of the most busiest ports in South Africa. So there are people who are stationed there doing work. They must be rewarded for the good work that they are doing there, subjected to all sorts of things there. This illicit cigarette smuggling is more rife in our province. Those big trucks that don't want even to stop on the freeway carrying illicit smuggled cigarettes, most of them come from there. So, Chairperson, so if they say those targets are somewhere here, I want to study them and understand. Page 31. Let me go to them. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So, which are the other four where you didn't get, which made you not to get the 100%? You only reached 70%. Okay, 10, 7, 12, 13. Okay, I will have to go through them and understand the four where there are issues, but commend the nine and those who are responsible for the nine. Thank you, Chef.
Honorable Defrators, Honorable Keita, is the issues you want to raise with CRPTA? Okay. Honorable Defrators.
Thank you, Chair. It's one of the disadvantages of being the last to ask questions. In some form or other, my colleagues have asked the questions that I would be asking, but just in a different way, but they've really the same questions. I just wanted to make a comment. And that I remember very clearly when our CEO of CBRT was appointed. He had just he was at the end of a long string of appointments of CEOs that kept on disappearing every few months. And if you want to see an entity that was collapsing, this was it. And again, I was very cynical when I saw Mr. Kamala, and I thought, oh, this poor guy is going to be so disillusioned and is going to be squashed like everybody else. So let me tell you, this man has taken this entity and transformed it. He really has done a fantastic job. I've seen it over the years. And this is one person that we need to congratulate and thank him for what he's doing for South Africa and what he's done to the entity. I mean, I'm reading through the reports now, and if I compare it to the reports from the previous years, they don't compare. They're completely different entities. Completely. So I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank him and his team, because I know it's not done on his own, for doing a really fantastic job in making our CBRT a world-class CBRT. And he must continue doing the fantastic projects that I see. I can only just congratulate him. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Defrators. You're doing it on behalf of the committee. Honorable Ramataka.
So what I should spoil that?
Do that.
No, I won't do it. All I want to say, Chair, is that what the organization should do, have a look at the concern that the AG has raised around the issue of the IT system issues, those issues, and the governance issues, IT governance issues that at least he is of management. And the last thing I wanted to raise is what the chair started with. You know this issue about uneven treatment on the cross-border transport, country to country, and South Africa receiving bit negative treatment. Last year, this was an issue. We raised this issue quite sharply, that some same thing, that is whether South African operators subjected to other countries where the treatment is visited on us must receive the same. In that way, it will then bring the agency to the executing authorities that this matter must be escalated upwards. So I do think that I don't know what emphasis we need to put in order for that to kick in, because I think probably Mr. Kumalo, the issue is that in your engagement at official level, that the unevenness with us with the legislation and other countries not having it, I think somehow we should make it clear that the line is drawn here. That's how you're going to be able to address the revenue as well, the issues of revenue that you're talking about there. And the last thing is a little bit of a plan about how we're going to mitigate the issues of deficit. That part is a big part that perhaps going forward there should be some kind of a plan that is put together for that to happen. It may well be that Chair, if I make a firm proposal that somehow in the future we should have the interaction and hear more or less of a developed plan to address that particular issue from the committee side, so that we don't default in our responsibility of oversight, because once the issue of a going concern get raised, it means that we need to pay serious attention to that particular comment. So I think for me that would be that maybe my parting shot, that let's maybe have that kind of, let's give the CEO a chance together with the board to actually go through the plan about this. And I'm not suggesting for one minute that you're going to have to write lots of tickets and ask your traffic to do certain things, but I'm just saying you probably, it's a lot of random sand of the plan, even though there may well be some donation here and there, but together with the Department of Transport, I think that you should be sitting together, coming forward and present to the committee what may constitute a turnaround plan and plan that mitigates the problem, because very soon this financial year will end and then we'll get a repeat of the going concern again. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Scott and Mr. Kumalo, your answers, please.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Can I go back to what Mr. De Freitas was saying in his commendation of our CEO and in trying to address Mr. Sangwan, the issue of the credit card? And I want to deal only with the credit card. The other issues are operational issues, and I allow the CFO and the CEO to deal with them. Prior to 2010, Cross Border was a non-operational entity. In 2010, and Cross Border has been active since 1998, that means 12 years. In 2010, we appointed the CEO, or I was not a board member at that stage, the CEO was appointed. From 2013, then in real terms, 2012, in 2 years, our systems were up and running and we started getting clean audits or unqualified audits, as you would want to call it. The point here is that, be it at the HR level, at the reporting level, this is where there were some problems with the credit card. But it must be noted that none were willful expenses or wasteful expenses or fraudulent expenses. These were reporting matters only. In other words, it was data capturing that never went down with the credit card. So in real terms, the credit card is not an issue to us as a board. But it needs to be noted in the AG's report. That's all that's important. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me start with the questions you raised around sustainability and going forward. I just want to give a sense of what has happened. When this issue of our going concern became an issue, we approached the minister. Together with the minister, we wrote to National Treasury asking for a bailout. And we're hopeful that National Treasury would assist in this regard. There is still no formal reply that we've received from National Treasury. But at the last meeting we had with the Director General gave us an indication that informally Treasury has indicated that there is no money. So there will be no bailout coming from them. So basically the DG was asked by National Treasury to reprioritize within his own budget within the department to see if they can get us a bailout. It's very clear that the department doesn't have the money and therefore will not be able to give us a bailout. So from that point of view, there is no immediate relief that is expected. What else is there in terms of mitigation? We are, as I have indicated, Chairperson, have developed a strategy that seeks to look at alternative revenue mechanisms. It's a pity that the issue of reciprocity or creating this, balancing the treatment that were given by other operators across our borders as the treatment that we give to operators coming from outside coming is now being raised sharply as a funding imperative for us, because we wanted not to be seen to be doing it for monetary gains. We wanted to be seen to be doing it as a matter of principle, of saying it is not right for South African operators to be subjected to unfair conditions out there when our counterparts, they are not subjected to the same. But the truth of the matter is, everywhere South African operators go, they are charged something called road user charges. Every country in SADC charges road user charges. Road user charges is simply a fee you pay for using a road in Zimbabwe, in Botswana, or in any of the other countries if you want to do business in those countries. When people from Botswana, Zimbabwe, and any of these countries come to South Africa, we don't charge them anything. And really, from whichever point of view you look at it is an unfairness and it creates an imbalance, which means the South African operator is subjected to onerous conditions that his counterpart from outside there is not subjected to, which means the South African operator has even more burdens to overcome before he can be profitable or run a business profitably. It's an issue we've been engaging in. The initial view of the minister was that we must ask ourselves, why is it that Nelson Mandela had allowed this in, because Mandela consciously, it would seem, the Mandela administration consciously decided not to introduce road user charges. And the minister was of the view that it may have had something to do with South Africa recognizing itself as having a bigger economy and a more robust economy and wanting to assist these other countries to catch up. But maybe the times have changed. Maybe now it's time to even the playing field. But the minister was of the view that let's not just rush into this without understanding why South Africa had allowed itself into this position to start with. Because it's clear that South Africa did not, it's not accidental that we allowed ourselves into this unfairness. It's very clear when you read historic documents that South Africa consciously allowed this situation. which is an inherent. So what the minister's view was to say, let's just understand and seek to get into that thinking before we seek to drastically change things. But with the issue of the situation we find ourselves in now, the minister has also said, no, maybe it's time we actually reviewed this issue of road user charges. So we sort of have a go-ahead now. Because as you know, we're a creature of statute, but at the same time, our minister is our political principal, and therefore anything we do on the policy front must have the explicit buy-in of the minister. So we are now in a process of actually developing, and we're actually assessing, we have a study where we're looking at what are the charges that the different countries are charging, and the idea is to then do a map which we'll present to this committee, will show you all the charges to say when a South African goes to Zimbabwe, this is what they are charged, when they go to Malawi, this is what, and therefore we'll also come with proposals on how we think we should counter those so that we balance the playing field. So that's the one thing. But in the short term, Chairperson, the other thing that we are hoping will assist us in the short term is just managing how we actually repay these operators. The one good thing I must say for us is that we haven't had a flood of all operators coming to queue at the door saying they want their money. So we deal with them as they make themselves available, but we haven't had a situation where we're flooded by all the operators. So if they continue to come in the manner in which they're coming, it buys us time in the sense that, yes, we don't have the total amount to pay them, but if Mr. De Freitas come, we pay Mr. De Freitas next month, Mr. Masonganyika, we pay Mr. Song. That way it's easier to manage because you pay them if you pay them one after the other, it's from a cash flow point of view, it still allows us to have sufficient cash. So as we generate cash, it allows us to pay the next. As we generate cash, it allows us. But if they were all to come at the same time and demand their payment, then it would collapse us, because then the total value of the money we owe will be more than the money we have. But the way they've been coming has allowed us to be able to cope in a sense. So it's not a perfect situation, but it has allowed us to stay afloat at the moment. And before the CFO has also raised some key points that he thought we should raise in response to your question, may I just ask him, Chairperson, to also address me?
Thank you, Chairperson and members. I think what I wanted to raise really, I think the CEO has already touched on it. The key issue is that in terms of the Constitutional Court judgment, the total amount that we owe operators is 318 million. If you look at our balance sheet at the end of the year, we had about 109 million in cash, but we also have other obligations. Now, the CEO indicated in terms of our engagement with the department, the sense is that we are not getting much assistance in terms of the bailout. What we've also begun to do is to review the current APP for this year to see where can we really get some savings. So certain projects, we might want to freeze them so that we can get the money to be able to pay. So that is something that is going to come. In terms of the different funding models, some of them are more in the long term, some of them might be in the short term. But we do have a strategy, as the CEO indicated, anchored on the government grant in terms of law enforcement, of which in this case we have submitted for next year's budget. We are waiting for the outcome from Treasury in terms of allocation for law enforcement. The CEO spoke into cross-border charges, of which we are currently commissioned the research in terms of the different countries. We should be able to finalize it and the business case very soon in terms of that. The other area that we are looking at is issues around your international ranking facilities and other revenue streams that we are looking at. And also in terms of the strategy, once we are able to move on it, but some of them requires us to then amend our legislation because our act does not allow us to do certain things. So really that's what I wanted to highlight, to say that in the absence of any assistance coming, we're really going to be faced with a challenge should operators, all of them, come at the same time. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to also cover we appreciate what Mr. Masongaye has said about the unqualified audit. Indeed, qualified audit is the first step. But if you can do better than that, it's nice to say when the auditor general looked at you, they didn't find anything. So that's the ultimate. It's almost like it's the ultimate you can aim for. Yes, we're happy that we've managed to have an unqualified audit opinion for 3 years in a row. But we're really, really hopeful that this year we will have clean, so that they don't have any issue to raise. And unfortunately, this matter of emphasis, owing to the going concern, messed up our plans. Because we want to be able to say we've reached the pinnacle of having moved from an entity that always had a qualification to an entity that has now managed to have zero issue with the Auditor General. So it's just an aspirational thing to aim for, and it would be nice to achieve that. We know that an unqualified audit opinion is good in its own right. And then there's just on the issues raised earlier with respect to the border post. Yes, sir, you are right that there are other undesignated points at which people use to enter, particularly in Maseru and also with South Africa and Mozambique borders. You do have other places that people use to enter South Africa or to leave South Africa. But when we talk about the 52, we talk about what is designated. And designated border post means it's a border post where at least one official government authority is stationed. And if it's a border post that's not busy, the first would be Home Affairs. And when it becomes a little bit busier, it would be Home Affairs and SARS. And then as it becomes busier, and then you have all the other entities falling in line. But a non-designated border post is an unofficial entry point. And we do have those, unfortunately, but they are actually not recognized as border posts as such. But the two specific ones you mentioned, I think you mentioned the one in Brazil, for instance, that one is a designated border post because you have all home affairs officials there. And we are only, in terms of the Act, allowed to monitor the official ones. Yes, Mananga, yes.
No. I think Mr. Sibanda knows the area very well. Mananga is the official one, but where Michelle died is the unofficial one.
Mbuzini.
Really, at Mbuzini.
So we only monitor the official ones, and then you have South African Defense Force, who the responsibility is for the borderline. Then theirs is to cover every part of South Africa. So they're supposed to ensure that no one can come in anywhere else. But unfortunately, the reality is that it's not as effective. They are not as effective as they ought to be in terms of their coverage, as it were. And you also have these funny situations where sometimes people, you have, in a, for instance, in Lesotho, you find that typically you have a relative, the uncle lives this side of the border, the other one lives that side. So these people actually, they actually don't see it. When you visit your uncle, the fact that you're crossing an international border, for them is a non-issue. For them, it's, this is my uncle's house there, and I'm here, and I'm just cool. So that happens. And to some extent, it's kind of tolerated, I would say. Because it's not like we don't know that these people do cross. As long as they go back home and in the evening to sleep where they belong, hopefully. But you do have situations where we have not, it's what we call unmonitored points of entry which are not designated. Unfortunately, those we as cross-border were not there because our role, as you would know, is to look after commercial movement of people and goods, which means we are only located where it's designated border posts that are officially recognized. You want to have a little talk?
Honorable Chair, honorable members, and I must ask your indulgence when I say this. The Lesotho matter, really, I think to ask our officials to start answering those questions becomes difficult. You would know that the minister has a task team. You would know how many engagements there were with Lesotho, with the Free State Government, with Gauteng. Mm. This is a political matter. Let's just be very blase about it. Mm. And leave it at that. And we really saying to you, help us. We have done what we could. Our officials have done their work. It's now a political matter. You need to jump in. Thank you.
I nearly forgot. When we talk about this matter, what is now left for the committee to do is to have a meeting with the Portfolio Committee on Police and Portfolio Committee on International Relations. Unfortunately, when we're trying to organize them before recess, most of them were kind of busy. We have agreed with both chairpersons of police and international relations that once we finish this exercise of BRRR, then we will engage so that we're able to deal with this matter, because definitely as a cross-border issue, it affects a number of departments. So those are the issues which actually in us dealing with this matter, that is how we would want to handle it. Other
outstanding
matters?
Chairperson, just the IT issue. Mr. Matakane raised the issue raised by the AG on IT governance. Just to say that it's true that we had those issues. In the main, those issues pertain to the fact that we didn't have a chief information officer. We've now appointed the chief information officer and we've set up that IT governance steering committee. So I would say that half of the issues that are raised there have already been attended to, and these issues will not be part of us going forward. On the uneven treatment of South African operators, and he was asking the question, what must happen to enable this to kick in? Like I said, we really we're waiting for a green light from the minister. We do have the plans, we do have the, everything is documented, and the study that we're conducting where we're just looking at reciprocity, looking at road user charges at the different countries, so that when we introduce something that is equitable and that is balanced. So it's, things will happen. There's nothing more you need to do as a committee. In fact, at our next briefing, we'll probably be presenting a comprehensive plan around that issue. I think I've covered everything, Chairperson. Thank you.
Honourable members, there we are. It looks like it's getting there. We will definitely be looking at the critical issues that you have raised here, but we hope that once we finish the BRRR issues, we'll want to engage either individually those committees or bring them both together. But if it's not possible for us, you can meet. Once we do that, we will be able to inform you so that you can be able to look at the report that we have coined as a portfolio committee, which has since, through the House Chair, is the one who said, looking at this report, this is what you need to do. So basically, those are the things that we are waiting. But you definitely will be involved, even if it's just to come and listen to the outcomes of that meeting. You will be informed. Good luck.
Thank you.
And we hope that you don't drop the ball. That is what becomes very important, that you don't drop the ball. When you do good work, you had Sandra saying here, we forgot to look at the bull's eye, and that is why some of the things fell by the wayside. So you just have to keep on keeping on. And you were... you become straight-jacketed so that you are able to succeed in what you're doing. You're released.
Thank you, sir.
Sure.